it's important, I suppose, early doors to clarify the crucial distinction between an ally and an enemy. When an ally is embarked upon, courses that you find at best questionable, at worst corrupt, then obviously you're going to pay more attention to it than you are if an enemy is embarked upon a course that you would expect an enemy, but not an ally, to be embarked upon. It's extraordinary that that needs explaining, but apparently it does. Nonetheless, Iran is all of the things that critics of Donald Trump fear the United States could become under a fascist leader, and then some. It is an absolutely hideous regime. So could Trump be the person to fight it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The Prime Minister says he's told Xi Jinping he wants a more sophisticated relationship with his country. Critics have raised concerns about China's human rights record and espionage record. Former senior Tory cabinet minister Sir Jeremy Hunt has told LBC Keir needs to proceed with extreme caution.
What China wants more than anything else is to hasten the breakup of the Atlantic relationship. They know that America's biggest strength is its network of allies. Donald Trump has not handled those allies at all well, as we know. That's really what China is trying to do. They're trying to turn the charm on, prize us even further away from America.
More than 12,000 reports of sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively shared with LBC show a 75% increase in allegations since 2020. Charlotte Mensah is a sickle cell patient who was assaulted by a cleaner. She's spoken to LBC after waiving her right to anonymity.
It made me so depressed, and I saw a psychiatrist, a legal psychiatrist who worked with my solicitors, and they diagnosed me with depression, anxiety and PTSD because I was sexually assaulted by that cleaner.
The government says healthcare leaders must take robust action to keep staff and patients safe. There's more on this story on the LBC app. A leading backer of the assisted dying bill has warned it may never be enshrined in law if the House of Lords keeps delaying its progress. Lord Falconer says it needs to be approved in the current parliamentary session or risk ultimately failing. 1,000 amendments have been put forward, with opponents insisting it needs proper scrutiny. The government is to instruct schools in England not to automatically send children home if they've been suspended. The Education Secretary has warned people who spend too much time away from the classroom are at risk of the harms of social media. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of £33 a year from April. The 5.4% increase is 2 percentage points above inflation. Water companies say the increase is needed to fund major investment in crumbling infrastructure. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 54 at 10,208. The pound buys $1.38 and €1.15. LBC weather: lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. I hope you're well. I really do. It's probably a German word for this as well, isn't there? I caught myself feeling a bit guilty on the way into the studio this morning about how fascinating I find the question that I am going to ask you. Is that weird? Guilty because the stakes are so high. We are discussing tens of thousands of deaths already. We're discussing hideousness on a scale that is, well, it's not unprecedented or unthinkable, but given that this has been the week in which we commemorated Holocaust Memorial Day, the actions of the Iranian regime remind us that, in some ways, the world does forget what that level of state-sanctioned murder and violence can look like. And I make no apology on this program for dedicating an awful lot of attention to fears that the United States could potentially be teetering on the edge of a decline into similar territory. Certainly murdering protesters on the streets is a line that should never be breached, but you can't pretend, I don't think, that murdering 2 or even 10 is the same as murdering 10,000. And that leads us into really weird territory. And by weird, I mean really interesting. And that is why I feel a little bit guilty about how interesting I find it, because, well, you know why, I've explained. We don't need to dwell unduly on that, but sometimes I like to get stuff off my chest before we dive into the topic. So most front pages to that. And let's just tick a few boxes, shall we? Hands up if you think it is absolutely ridiculous to worry that Donald Trump would happily start World War III if it was going to distract attention from anything from the ICE operatives who were murdering and Border Patrol operatives who were murdering citizens on the streets of Minneapolis right through to the Epstein files, 2 million pages of which are yet, despite his promises and indeed the demands made of the Department of Justice, that are yet to be released. What do you think Donald Trump wouldn't do to stop proper scrutiny of his goon squad and or the release of the Epstein files? Hands up if you think he would balk at the idea of war. Maybe not world war, it's a slightly overused phrase, but would he actually start a war to distract attention from his own moral depravity? Yes or no? Come on, there must be one person who thinks Donald Trump wouldn't start a war to distract attention from his own moral depravity and murderous regime. No, apparently not. So that is point number one. We are doing that thing that we don't know how not to do. Don't talk about the thing that he's announcing just to distract attention from the thing that he was doing yesterday, to distract attention from the thing that he was doing on Tuesday. I'm not even exaggerating this week, am I? But if it is the potential attack on a Middle Eastern power a Middle Eastern power with nuclear ambitions, then you can't ignore it. This is the stuff that's so frustrating. Oh, you're fully... Oh, it's just a dead cat, James. I don't know why you're talking about this. I mean, crikey, he just doesn't want you to talk... I'm not having a go at you for sending me these messages. I did at the beginning of last week, but I've changed my mind about that now. It's a perfectly reasonable response. But you can't not do it. Do you see what I mean? You possibly could not talk about some publicity stunt that he's undertaken. Maybe don't talk about knocking down the West Wing, or the East Wing, sorry, in order to distract attention from Epstein. But you can't not talk about him launching an armada that is currently heading towards Iran, moving quickly towards the country with what he has described as great power, enthusiasm and purpose. So it doesn't matter how enormous a dead cat it may be, there is a level of enormity that cannot be ignored. However clever you think you are, however brilliant, however fearful you might be of what this represents and what this means, you can't ignore it. Of course you can't ignore it. It's potentially war. Hopefully Iran will quickly come to the table. Why does he put this stuff in quotes? It's mystery hour later. Why does he put half of this stuff in capital letters and the rest of it in quotes? I truly have no idea at all. Hopefully Iran will quickly come to the table and negotiate a fair and equitable deal. No nuclear weapons in capital letters. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a tickle in my throat. I'm old enough to remember when he was doing a lap of honour for having eradicated all of Iran's nuclear capabilities for generations. Or did I dream that? Did I dream the bit where Donald Trump launched a military attack upon Iran's nuclear facilities and claimed that they'd been absolutely annihilated? So why on earth would they need to come to the table and do a fair and equitable deal that would remove all nuclear weapons from their arsenal? Time is running out, he writes. It is truly of the essence. As I once told Iran before, make a deal in capital letters. They didn't, and there was, quotes, Operation Midnight Hammer. There you go, I didn't dream it. A major destruction of Iran. But apparently not as destructive as he originally claimed, because he also writes the next attack will be far worse. Don't make that happen again. So, I mean, crikey, this has happened quickly, hasn't it? And it is clearly not a coincidence that it's happened in a week where support for his regime is at its lowest and dissatisfaction and unhappiness with the death squad marching around Minneapolis killing people at will is reaching fever pitch. Don't look at Minneapolis, look at Tehran. Donald Trump is shouting at the very top of his voice. I'm not going to labour this point, but I do want it to be front and centre. You can't not do it. Just because it is a morally depraved monster who is shouting, don't look at Minneapolis, look at Tehran, doesn't mean that looking at Tehran becomes the wrong thing to do. How can you not look at Tehran on a morning like this? I mean, frankly, how could you not be looking at it last week, as we did, or the week before, because of what the regime there is doing? Which is, I mean, all of the things that we worry about, and this is why I open this morning with the distinction between an enemy and an ally. I honestly find some of the morality policing that's done by people on the right of politics and the far right of politics so hilariously transparent that it's a miracle that they still do it. Why, for example, people who are critical of the genocide in Gaza, you say, why aren't you talking about what's going on in Iran? And he says, well, Iran is our enemy. And you don't necessarily expect your enemy to bend to your bidding or to be susceptible to your negotiations or interventions. You ask allies to stop doing disgusting things. You ask allies to behave in a way that is presumably part of the reason why you were allies in the first place. You don't have the same dialogue about enemies that you have about allies. Otherwise, you're treating enemies and allies just the same. Regardless of what Rudyard Kipling might have written 100-and-something years ago, that's a stupid thing to do. You do not treat your enemies and your allies just the same. Otherwise, you'd never have allies, and all you'd have would be enemies. So I can't believe that needs clarifying, but it does. The Iranian regime is hideous. Every time I talk to you about dystopian, every time I mention anything from 1984 to The Handmaid's Tale to The Hunger Games, all of that is in Iran and worse. Just because people can lead relatively civilized lives, because they are not upsetting the regime or they're not coming to the attention of the regime, does not in any way dilute the reality of the horror. Every dystopia contains outwardly happy people. Every totalitarian society has got people who are on the right side of the madness for now. I'm going to have to stop saying to you, I think of Henry VIII often. But I think of Henry VIII often because you are winning. You've got, you know, you've just built Hampton Court. You're absolutely laughing in the court of a mad king until you have to give him your house and you get your head chopped off. So there are always people who are for now benefiting from the status quo, even if the status quo is utterly corrupt. And that doesn't change the fact that the Iranian regime is as hideous as regimes get. Have we established that now sufficiently, that it is an objective fact that the Iranian regime is absolutely hideous? All the things that liberals detest, all the things that supporters of democracies detest, all the things that believers in human rights and basic humanitarianism absolutely detest, all the things that good people should be prepared to go to war for are on the ground in Iran. But how do you end up thinking Donald Trump is the man to deliver righteousness, goodness, deliverance? That's the thing. How big a factor is Donald Trump being Donald Trump in your answer to the question of whether or not the United States should attack Iran? In his words, in a far worse way than it did last time. And again, I mean, all the things I feel that I need to keep hitting you with are going to run through this hour like a Blackpool through a stick of rock. Of course it's a dead cat. Of course he wouldn't be doing this if the situation on the ground in the United States was better. I don't think the Armada would be heading towards Tehran if Alex Pretty hadn't been murdered this weekend. Does that even sound controversial to you? Does it sound like an original thought? If Alex Pretty hadn't been murdered this weekend, Trump's armada would not currently be heading towards Iran. I put half my house on that. You never know. It's counterfactual. You can never prove it. So there it is. You know, that is a fact. Well, it's as close to a fact as an opinion can get. Number two, the Iranian regime is objectively disgusting. It is 100 paces, it is 100 miles further down the road towards fascist dictatorship than Donald Trump is, and hopefully will ever be, but I wouldn't put half my house on that. Keep an eye on the midterms. And there is only really one power on the planet possessed of sufficient heft and will, because neither China nor Russia are likely to tread on the mullah's toes, the Ayatollah's toes, anytime soon. There is only really one power on the planet that has the will or the wherewithal to tread on the Ayatollah's toes. And that power is the United States of America. So how do you juggle these things? How do you juggle these things? Iranian people begging for America's help. And America and Trump, in contexts like this, are synonymous. But Trump is a morally depraved monster. I mean, it's not to trivialise the plight of the Iranian people, but you know the old line about Mussolini got the trains to run on time. It was the sort of last redoubt, I think, of the apologist. The fact that the apologist for fascism, yeah, all right, you know, loads of people got murdered, but at least he got the trains to run on time. You're sort of looking for Donald Trump is all of the things his critics have been warning about for years, but at least he's on the right side of history when it comes to attacking the Ayatollahs. And yet, are the Ayatollahs objectively worse in any way than Vladimir Putin, who he cozies up? Do you see what I mean about the impossibility of an ethical foreign policy in this case? I remember when people said to me, should we be taking Saddam Hussein off the board? Because look at these terrible dictators over there. Why aren't we doing anything about them? And I was dismissing. I mean, I wasn't even doing this for a living at the time, so I'm not going to be too hard on myself. I think I was still a showbiz journalist. So quite why anyone was asking me about the prospect of getting Saddam Hussein taken. No, I think I was just in the foothills of doing this kind of stuff for a living on daytime television. And my logic then was, if you've got 10 murderous dictators lined up against the wall and you've only got one bullet, you use it. And it means 9 walk free. But if Donald Trump is going to get on his high horse about Iran while simultaneously ticking the toes of Vladimir Putin, what does that do? You lob that rock into the pond of world, quotes, peace, end quotes. Where do the ripples end? Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. Benjamin Netanyahu is the architect of a genocide. And he's on Donald Trump's board of peace. But he's the guy that can go into Iran and sort out the Ayatollahs. And I think part of the reason I'm so tortured this morning, intellectually, because I've got no skin in the game, it's because I think he should. I don't know how else you rescue the people of Iran. But almost every time you've had these thoughts about foreign regimes, even when you didn't have a madman in the White House, it's ended badly. Of course the United States should go into Afghanistan. Of course it should. Of course the United States should topple Saddam Hussein. I think most people recognise that at the very least, the way in which it was done was a terrible mistake, even if they can still sustain the belief that the original ambition to topple Saddam Hussein was sound and solid. The way it was done was disastrous. Ditto the Taliban, who are, spoiler alert, still in power in Kabul, despite a 20-year engagement which saw 457 members of British military personnel killed, something later denigrated and derided by Donald Trump, which Nigel Farage elected to describe as not quite fair. These people are hideous. But they are not as hideous as the Ayatollahs. So, do we do that? Do we support a Donald Trump-led attack on Iran or not? Given all the factors that I've just shared with you. You see why it's philosophically fascinating, and you see why I began this introduction by describing a weird and vague sense of guilt about finding it so fascinating. When it's the lives of Iranians that are in the balance, and potentially, depending on what kind of attack Donald Trump chooses to describe as far worse than the last one, it could be US lives on the line as well. He urges them to keep protesting, despite the fact that they could get killed, which again draws your mind back to Minneapolis. He promises them that help is on its way, but then backtracks on the grounds that the killing has stopped. And then he comes back again, because I think everyone would have to agree, unless they were so bent that they can't lie straight in bed at night, the situation at home is so bad, he needs to start a war, or he needs to sound as if he's about to start a war. Activists say 30,000 people have been killed during the recent unrest. And that's why the parallels with Minneapolis are only intellectually valid. There's no comparison between two murders and 30,000 murders, except in principle, in essence, in moral. It's the quality of mercy, not the quantity. But how does any of this square with the fact that Donald Trump would sell his grandmother for a mess of pottage? Donald Trump would absolutely shoot someone on Fifth Avenue if he thought it would enhance his electoral. He'd demand that governors lie. He is utterly, utterly corrupt. And his regime is killing people on the streets of his cities. But he's still the only guy that can go into Iran and do anything about it. So that's it. That's it. There you go. Long, long, long introduction, as always. Very short question. Do you want Donald Trump to attack Iran? 0345 6060 973, with obviously huge parentheses containing the observation that he is hideous. He's a prototype dictator. He is, at the very least, fascist adjacent. He is, when we get onto what he said about Ilhan Omar later in the program, you'll realize, if there's any doubt in your mind at all, he is all of the things that his critics have been telling you he is since he first threw his hat into the presidential ring. And now almost all of his defenders and supporters are recognizing that. But all of that notwithstanding, can we still support an attack on Iran if he is the man leading it? That's the question I want you to answer. And I have absolutely no idea what you're going to say. 0345 6060 973. Trump is all of those things. You don't need to remind me. You don't need to text me. Trump is all of those things and worse. Iran is all of those things and worse than worse. So do you use one to curtail the murderous regime of the other? I have absolutely no clue, but I told you it was an interesting question. And you can answer it by hitting the numbers now. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 24 minutes after 10. Just to return your thoughts to Minneapolis momentarily, Marianne and others, great minds think alike. I know you shouldn't play music, James, but please play a snippet of Bruce Springsteen's new song, Streets of Minneapolis. It's a small way to contribute to the brave protesters, and you're absolutely right, and we already planned to. So it's just a question of A, remembering, and B, squeezing it into the show. But before that, we are turning our attention to the thing that Trump is doing to distract attention from Minneapolis, and we do it knowing that we are not falling into his trap, but doing his bidding. But we don't feel we've got any choice, because the prospect of a U.S. attack upon Iran is enormously important. But does the identity of the man leading it in any way dilute your enthusiasm or define your reaction to the question of whether or not it should happen? And in fact, there you go. It took me 20 minutes to say that this morning. Ali is in Birmingham. Ali, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Great fan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'm a British Iranian, and I want to kind of offer a viewpoint from Iranians who are there in Iran.
Of course.
After the massacre, tens of thousands are being killed over two nights, yeah. Which is it's far beyond what we thought the regime is capable of.
Yeah.
A lot of them say, we are alive, but we are absolutely dead inside.
Oh, Lord.
You know, all my contacts are in the same. So it's a very, very heavy trauma in the public. And I think I'm a very big critic of Trump in many ways, and I think that's the only lifeline that Iranian society can see now for them. So I think that's the only glimmer of hope that they have.
I choose my words carefully, because there are instances throughout history of hideous regimes being overcome from within when the sheer weight of numbers and of protest breaches the barricades, overcomes. I mean, I know it didn't end well, but Egypt most recently probably is an example, or the Arab Spring. Why can't that happen in Iran? Because I sense that if it was going to, then it would have done.
Right. Something about Iran is very different from some of the other regimes there.
Yes.
Is that the crackdown system is so carefully designed, is so carefully trained, is so sophisticated that it is so capable of...
So more like Syria then, more like Syria, but that was...
More, very, very similar to Syria.
Okay.
And Syria was very much... Assad could sustain power because of Iran and because of the...
And Russia.
That Iran was supporting and Russia, of course. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So it is this way or no way. And that means... In a way, my enemy's enemy is my friend. I mean, you know, Donald Trump might be is all of the things that we describe him as, but there is nobody else with the will or the wherewithal, for whatever reason, even if he's doing it out of the most pure and naked self-interest. If you were to take a utilitarian approach to the welfare of the Iranian population, then you'd have to want him to do what he is, today at least, minded to do.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I am kind of a critic of Donald Trump.
Of course.
But many of my friends don't share the same. So a lot of people are really, really his fan. I mean, there are fractions in Iranian society who praise Donald Trump in general.
Well, there are factions in Iranian society who praise the Ayatollahs. I think 20% in the last opinion poll, and this was before the current carnage, were comfortable or supportive of the status quo.
So that's
the other problem that we've got is the lessons learned in Iraq and Afghanistan and societal differences notwithstanding. Syria, I mean, it'd be ridiculous to expect it to be a model of liberal democracy already, but it's got a heck of a lot of problems. What happens afterwards? What happens after Trump topples the Ayatollah? If indeed that happens, which, I mean, I don't want to rain on your parade. I doubt. I think if an attack is all he needs for the next round of headlines, which is all he cares about. Regime change doesn't give him anything. Therefore, I don't think he'll actually go about regime change. But let's say that he did. What happens next?
Well, it seems to me that there are, I mean, from my point of view, I think Iranian society, from what I see, is that is capable enough to take the agency and decide what they want. But broadly, what I believe it will happen afterwards, if people are given the chance, is a move towards a liberal democracy. Now, what form it will take, secular, democracy, so what form it takes, I don't know, but that's the overwhelming sense that I have from people. And I think Trump is I mean, there are elements of self-interest, but over the last 2 weeks, I think there are also signs that some of the moves that he's doing is carefully planned. So talking with the nations in the region, thinking about, you know, the military logistics. You know, we know the Abraham Lincoln ship was being kind of sent, not last couple of days, but from almost 10 to 12 days ago, it was on the way. So it is a lot of, it's not only him, but people around him are giving him some sort of good intelligence, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are other options that could happen. You will be aware of this, but some people listening may not. You could have the army replacing the religious regime. You could have a moderation of policy, but the regime staying in place. You could have retaliation. That's certainly what the leadership is wanting us to believe, describing itself as having its finger on the trigger. Not that it could ever defeat the US Navy or Air Force, but it could do a heck of a lot of damage in the meantime. So all of these things, as you say, are dwarfed by the damage that the regime could do to the Iranian people if the status quo persists. And it leads us to this really uncomfortable conclusion, but possibly inevitable, that there's nothing Donald Trump could do that would make people desperate for regime change in Iran abandon him as the agents of that change, because there is no other agent on the planet. So, I mean, it's a smaller story in the great scheme of things, but the FBI raided an election office in Georgia on Wednesday as part of Donald Trump's blatant, egregious and barefaced lies about the 2020 US election. He wants to rewrite that bit of history. So he's almost like a sort of pound shop Ayatollah. He wants to rewrite history. He wants dissent to be crushed. He wants protesters to be killed. Well, he allows protesters to be killed. He is all of the things that the Ayatollahs were in embryo when they first set off on this path. But at the moment, he's the only person that can tackle them. And therefore, if you really, really want them tackled, you have to turn off your care and concern about the caliber, the morality, the depravity of the man who would lead that response. It's really strange, isn't it? And it's certainly not binary. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's President Xi. They've held talks in Beijing after the Prime Minister called for a more sophisticated relationship with the country. A man's been arrested as part of an investigation into a series of fires at properties linked to Sir Keir Starmer. A 19-year-old was arrested in Essex on Wednesday on suspicion of conspiracy to commit arson. And schools will be told to keep more pupils suspended for bad behaviour on site rather than send them home. The Education Secretary says it'll prevent children retreating to social media instead of serving their punishment. LBC weather, any fog will clear, leaving a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big motoring world, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:35 is the time. I'm going to play you a little bit of that Bruce Springsteen song because it's Mystery Hour today, coming up at 12. I've got a couple of things we need to get through. Henry Reilly's been out on the scoop trail again. He's going to be joining us with one of his reports and investigations. I've got some cracking missed informations for you and a remarkable story about a senior member of the Conservative Party apparently being, I can't say he personally did it, but someone who has been convicted of a crime after an investigation by anti-terrorism officers was doing something that was explicitly approved of by a senior member of the Conservative Party. I'll leave you to wriggle your way through that one. So I need to get this in now, and it's really powerful. And Bruce Springsteen kind of wrote a song on Friday. It's going to sound like Craig David now. Wrote a song on Sunday, went to the studio on Monday, and had it out in front of the public by Tuesday or Wednesday, or we chilled on Thursday.
Against smoke and rubber bullets in the dawn's early light, citizens stood for justice, their voices ringing through the night. And there were bloody footprints where mercy should have stood, and two dead left to die on snow-filled streets, Alex Pretty and Renee Good.
10:36, you listen to protest songs, don't you? People like Woody Guthrie and back in the day, and you sort of feel, and a lot of Irish protest songs as well, that they belong to a different age or a different era that we've left behind forever. And then you listen to something like that and realise you never leave it behind forever. Before we go to Beta and to Sarah, who are both British-Iranian, I just a quick word on Trump. It's incredibly liberating to let go of the hope that he's not all the things you worry that he is. I've only really clocked this morning, particularly with that story about the FBI raiding a Georgia election office in the hope of sustaining his lies about the 2020 election. And they will doctor it. They will do absolutely anything to serve Trump. Now, the forces of law and order will murder people in the street, secure in the knowledge that they will be protected by him, until they're not, of course. But it's quite liberating to let go of hope, to let go of normality bias, to think to yourself, it's the United States. It can't possibly be happening, but it is. I mean, there is absolutely no argument anymore against it, except arguments offered up by liars and cheats. You cannot argue with the fact that Donald Trump's regime is absolutely hideous and fascistic. It has death squads marching through the streets of American cities. It is trying to rewrite history. One of the great alarm bells of fascism throughout the ages. It is literally trying to rewrite history with regard to the 2020 election. It is denying observable reality. It has been since the start. It is weaponizing dishonesty and untruth on a scale that is only ever really seen under totalitarian and fascist regimes. And if you let go, as I have only in the last week or so, of that little hope that you've been holding on to, that no. And even supporters of him who are disgusted by things that he's done are sort of thinking, well, he'll come good in the end. He can't be that bad. You let go of that hope. He can't be that bad. And it is oddly liberating. He is. There you go. And that little, what would it, it's almost like a guitar string in your soul. It's not tugging anymore. You're not being pulled back to the hope. He is a fascist. He is a pound shop Ayatollah. He is a wannabe dictator. He is a disgusting, depraved, amoral man, doing disgusting, depraved and amoral things. And once you stop hoping that he isn't, everything gets clearer and easier to process. That's a word of advice for you there. And that is profoundly relevant to the question that I'm asking you. Because there is a but. I like big buts. I cannot lie. He is a disgusting, depraved, amoral man, but he is Iran's only chance. He's the Obi-Wan Kenobi for the Iranian people. And therefore, do you have to park your obvious and well-founded objections to the depravity, the amorality, the killing, the lying, because he is your only hope? Beta is in Barnet. Beta, what would you like to say?
I would just like to say that the people of Iran know very clearly what it is that they want. Mm. They understand the cost that is involved in asking for foreign intervention and the results that it will yield. And I think it is the job of every democratic country and leader to understand and respect it. I think in the West, we have the luxury of existing and living in democratic societies. So it's a privilege to be able to nitpick at someone's policies and other things like that, because we are not being shot at with war-grade bullets when we leave our homes. We
have who's nitpicking policies? What are you referring to there?
Sorry, I meant as in his like internal policies that we might not necessarily agree with. I think the people of Iran...
I'm talking about civilians being murdered on the streets of Minneapolis and civilians being murdered on the street of Tehran. And I wouldn't be comfortable with anybody describing objections to either of those things as nitpicking.
Yeah, no, I just meant I've had other Iranians, not in relation to that, but I've had other Iranians talk about his policies around... like abortion and other things like that. That's the part I was referring to. I think what's really important to recognise is that the people of Iran are being killed in their masses. We've had reports of human rights organisations very clearly stating that over 30,000 people, including children as young as 3, being shot at. I know a family friend of mine whose daughter was shot at the age of 8 for chanting and protesting on their balcony. So whilst I don't deny that what is happening in those parts of America are wrong, I think the situation in Iran is highly critical. It's almost like saying, my house is being burglarized, I'm being beaten up on the side of the street, someone is willing to come and help. Let me just pause.
I don't care who that person is. There's an ineluctable logic to what you're saying, but what if that person is the least trustworthy person in town?
I think that what's also important to recognise is that during the Obama
administration... Just have a crack at my question, if you would. What if that person is the least trustworthy person in town? What if that person has never kept a promise?
If I'm being beaten up and violently shot at, I don't have the luxury of taking a step back and thinking, is this person trustworthy? I think what is also important to take note of is that the people of Iran during the Obama administration and the Biden administration did try to reach out. And what those two administrations did was they handed over billions of dollars to the Ayatollahs, who further funded their terror proxies on a global scale, causing mass deaths on a global scale, as well as further brutalizing and murdering thousands of Iranians inside Iran. So it's not that they haven't tried other avenues. It's not that they haven't tried to do things organically.
Yeah.
We also, whilst I agree that not all of the Trump administration policies and actions are, you know, they're not 100% great, not everything.
So you're doing that thing again. They are hideous. They're not just not 100% great. They are killing civilian protesters. They are lying about everything from election results to the attack yesterday on Ilhan Omar. They have been talking about... I mean, they are... I'm really uncomfortable with a couple of the things that you're saying, like nitpicking and not 100%. The regime, and maybe you need to do that to justify your full-throated support for them intervening. You kind of don't want to look too hard at the person who's rescuing you from being beaten up. What if they're a rapist?
When we had some of the attacks...
That's a pertinent point. What if the person who's rescuing you from being beaten up is a rapist, to continue
if
your analogy?
Violently attacked, I don't have the logic
that's the
or
point.
The luxury.
Well, I think you're right. I get it. But let's not say that the rapist is not 100% nice or not nitpicking with his criminal record.
I personally believe that there is good and bad in every human. And I do believe that whilst all of his actions and policies are not great, some of them...
Yeah, we could say that about the Ayatollahs, could you?
No, absolutely not.
Hang on, you just said I believe that there is good and bad in everyone, and some of his policies aren't great.
But as far as the Iranians are concerned, the Ayatollahs and the regime have never served the Iranians. there is a very small minority
20%
of
the population are still supportive. I agree with you, by the way. I'm just interrogating your arguments, and I'm unhappy with nitpicking and not 100% supporting.
I apologize for offending you or any of your listeners.
I suppose what I'm pushing you towards, Peter, is it absolutely doesn't matter. Even if he was a war criminal, even if it was Vladimir Putin threatening to topple the Ayatollahs, you'd be there for it.
And I think
yes or no.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Yes or no.
If it was
Vladimir Putin,
would I personally advocate for Vladimir Putin doing that? No, because Vladimir Putin hasn't had the same sort of impact that Trump has. I do think that President Trump.
Well, that's your choice. We're talking about Trump being the only person that can do it, and we're imagining a world in which Vladimir Putin could, with his not 100% great record. So why would you not want Vladimir Putin to do it?
What I'm explaining to you is I haven't looked at the Vladimir Putin. You know, if he was the equivalent of Donald Trump, but he was called Vladimir Putin, then yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, I think is the point that we will struggle to fully accept unless we're Iranian. I literally don't care who does it, because it has to be done. And please God that the lessons of Afghanistan or Iraq are not relevant, because Iran is a different regime. Please God we won't be replacing the mullahs with the army, or we won't be seeing things get worse as a consequence of Donald Trump's intervention. I've only got one die, and it's Donald Trump's die, and therefore I'm going to roll it. And I think I agree with you, but I wouldn't trust Donald Trump as far as I can throw him. And we'll be sitting here in a month, and things will either have not changed at all, or they will have got worse. But the hope that they might get better is enough to propel the position that you very powerfully describe. And that may be it. That's it. It doesn't matter. Even if it was Putin, even if it was somebody who has done hideous things in other countries. Then Venezuela, he's kidnapped a president of a sovereign country on absolutely unproven charges of drug trafficking, while simultaneously releasing the president of another country who'd been convicted in an American court of drug trafficking. You see what I mean about how liberating it is once you recognize how hideous he is. But if I was Iranian and I was desperate to see the regime removed or massively curtailed, would I care how hideous he is? Or would I be like Peter and I'd have to, either subconsciously or consciously, minimize how hideous Donald Trump is in order to justify my support for what I want him to do? I think I would. I truly think I would.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We heard from hundreds of pub owners who had their heads in their hands at the changes which would have left them without a business to run, without a pint to pour. But the government has come back for another try, announcing a wider review of business rates. Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson.
Listening to your show over recent weeks and hearing from the publicans who've been coming on, you and your programme on LBC does vital work in surfacing these issues.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw. So
let's go, Kev. Hershey's bagel for lunch.
Woohoo! Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
To be
or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 10 minutes to 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Yes, we do want Trump to attack, says Azita. There's a broad breakdown between, so Denise writes, no, the US should not attack Iran and risk dragging the rest of us into a world war. I can't read too much into people's names, but if I did read too much into people's names, Ramina, for example, I'm not sure it can get worse, James, that's the point. There's a breakdown where reluctance seems to come from people less likely to have any skin in the game, less likely to have any connections to Iran in particular or the Middle East in general. And support generally seems, for the idea of Trump doing it, seems to come from people who do have investment in, whether familial, emotional or geographical investment in Iran itself. But that, of course, is not going to cover everybody. There will be plenty of people desperate to see the regime overthrown who are not quite desperate enough to want Donald Trump to lead it. And I get that too. 10:51 is the time. Manu is in Berkhamsted. Manu, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. First of all, love you.
Oh, well, that's a great start, Manu. So, me too, I love you now as well. That's great.
So, I have been living in the UK for 42 years, never been back to Iran. I want to see the end of these murderous regime. There's no doubt about it. But I don't want it to be Donald Trump helping attacking Iran, because many reasons. One is the fact that foreign policies that the West uses towards countries in the Middle East is at play here.
Yeah.
And first of all, I mean, I was...
Yeah, I know that's a word that's used a lot to describe him, but there's some things that we can't call him. The technical situation is that he sued a woman who accused him of rape for libel and lost. So I just need to be a little bit clear on that. But his moral depravity is visible from space.
I'm just quoting the judge in America.
But no,
anyway.
You're not. But anyway, let's park that.
Okay. But anyway, his word is worth nothing.
Yes, that's the point, isn't it? I was trying to make to beat her. Is that, okay, I understand why you want to trust this man, but he is utterly and completely untrustworthy.
He was talking about going to Gaza for peace, but he was talking about making a Riviera there.
Still
he's
is.
Not interested in people. Yeah, he's not interested in helping people. He's killing his own people. How is he going to help people in Iran? How is he going to take...
So how does it end then? How does the regime in Iran change?
I think it's people. I think if people realize there's nobody there other than themselves to actually, because that's what true revolutions are, is by people, for people, and have a leader and get organized. They're literally sitting there waiting for Shah's son, so removed from reality of Iran, to go and rule Iran. And even he's saying, look, I'm not going to go there and rule. I'm going to be a transitional.
But Ali made the point that the infrastructure in the country makes the prospect of successful insurrection almost impossible.
Well, I mean, I get that. It's very, very difficult for people.
What if it's the only escape route? The only viable escape route is the one that that hideous grinning orange face is presiding over.
Do you know what my guess is?
No.
He's literally going to do a deal with the mullahs.
Yeah.
So interesting.
I mean, he'll do whatever is best for him. And what you're betting the house on, or what other earlier callers are betting everything on, is the hope that what is best for him will also be best for the Iranian people. And that is so optimistic that it's, I mean, it's barely worth considering.
Didn't he threaten that as soon as the first executions happen, he's going to take his locked and loaded in?
Yeah, and he promised the Iranian people he'd come and help them, and then he said it, and then he didn't. But here's the thing. The regime has killed an estimated 30,000 people. The next time people rise up against it, they will do that again, and again, and again, and again. And without external help, I don't see it ever ending. And the only external help currently available has got Donald Trump's hideous paw prints all over it. So what do you do?
Yeah,
what do you do?
Yeah, but unfortunately, he's the price he will ask for. I think he'll be a heavy price.
There's a story yesterday, and Marco Rubio before a Congress, about some Venezuelan oil that's been sold for, I think, $500 million, $500 million worth of Venezuelan oil. And under questioning in Congress, they revealed that $300 million has been given to the Venezuelan government. No one's quite sure what that means. It's not like they have a PayPal account or a, you know, or an account. And where's the other $200 million? And he kind of let it go that it's in a bank account in Qatar or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is what I mean about the liberating nature of recognizing the corruption. The idea that Donald Trump would help himself to Iranian oil is not even fanciful, because it's exactly what he's doing to Venezuelan oil, with $200 million currently missing from
James, let's not forget, this is all about hiding the Epstein files.
Yeah, but that is true and not relevant at the same time. It's relevant and not relevant at the same time, because 30,000 people are dead. So I don't today care about whether or not this is distracting from the Epstein files. If the killing stops or the people response to it are brought to justice, then the Epstein files, well, I'm going to stick with that helpless phrase, relevant and not relevant.
Well, his agenda then goes towards whether you're going to get a result out of this or not.
No, I know it does. And that's why I think, and I knew this was going to happen, that I feel my own position, for what it's worth, because it's meaningless in the greater scheme of things. I have no family there. It's not true to say that we don't have skin in the game, because the Iranian regime could, of course, respond by sponsoring terrorism. Then that could affect any of us, whether you're Iranian, British, or anything, actually. Terrorists are not choosy about who they kill in pursuit of their goals, but that absence of investment in it, immediate investment in it, means that I'm swinging back now. I'm kind of thinking, no, you can't, because it's Trump. You just can't trust him, even if it's the only escape route. But what do? You stay in prison. The only escape route you've got, the only tunnel you can go down, is going to be dug by Donald Trump. Now, I don't think he's going to dig it. I really don't. I don't think he's going to do anything to help the Iranian people when push really comes to shove, unless it serves his purposes, and that is going to be brief. But imagine that he did, and imagine that he was, and the only escape tunnel you've got has been dug by Donald Trump. Are you going to stay in jail? Are you going to stay sitting in jail, or are you actually going to take your chances? I don't know who else was suddenly thinking of the Shawshank Redemption then when I talked about an escape route dug by Donald Trump, but are you going to take your chances in the sewage pipe? Minu is not. Peter is. Sarah is in Nottingham. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Hi. Hello. Hi, and nice to meet you. I would completely take my chances.
Yeah.
I completely disagree with the person before you.
Sure.
We have lots of Iranian people. By the way, I'm British Iranian as well.
Every caller today is, actually. Just to note that.
It really frustrates me when you ask some Iranian people and they say they don't want Donald Trump, and you ask them, like you just did, what's the other option? They don't have another option.
It needs to come from within.
That's not a real option. I think thousands, tens of thousands of people have died. Millions, we meet millions of people come on the streets in Iran, all across Iran, in villages, in towns. and empty-handed. How are you supposed to? I don't understand why it was okay to have foreign intervention for when the West needed it in the Second World War, when Japan needed it. But when it's the Iranian people, they have to go empty-handed and be slaughtered. There is absolutely no way. There's no. These people have done uprisings for years.
Not to patronise you, but the obvious difference is that the Nazis were invading sovereign countries and the Allies were defending them from either actual or future potential invasion, whereas the Iranian regime was put in place by the Iranian people. So forgive me for being nitpicking, a bit pernickety.
The Iranian people, I think a lot of people think there's a lot of intervention there.
Of course.
And, secondly,
but that's the point, isn't it? Is that there is intervention, and it's, there, it just doesn't stand. The comparison with the Second World War doesn't really work. That's all I'm saying, and I'm sorry for saying
it. It does, to some extent, because I know what you mean, but in the way of how are you supposed to do it?
Exactly.
You had
without weapons, outside support.
Exactly. When you have weapons from other countries, they couldn't beat the Nazis like you did. How are normal, empty-handed people are supposed to beat a brutal regime where they proved in the last few days that they will stop at nothing? They shot people in hospitals. They went in people's houses and shot them. There is no way you can stop that. So I think we need to stamp that out.
This is brilliant. And I feel my own position shifting, and I apologise for being so trivial, really, in the greater scheme of things when the stakes are so high.
It is so high. I don't think you quite realise how substantial, consequential. What an important position we're in at the moment.
It makes me realise something. If I could somehow construct a magic computer and say that Donald Trump offers you a 1% chance of deliverance from the Ayatollahs, you'd still take it.
I would take it.
Yeah, that's the point.
I tell you what some people, Iranian people, think. It's not, when you said you use an example of a rapist, yeah?
Yeah.
I would take it. I would take it. Yeah. And I tell you why. A rapist is going to harm, 10, 20 rape people, yeah? It's not just about the tens of thousands of people that are being killed now. It's about the generations to come. Young people are going down the streets and they're saying, I don't care about me. I care about the next generation. Yeah. It's not just 1 year, 2 years. It's tens and tens of years. Iran is a very proud country with about 3,000 years of history. We want to look ahead and we're thinking, okay, we'll die now, but for tomorrow, we'll have a better generation. And one other point I want to put. Of course, I agree about Donald Trump. You know, we all know what he's like, and we all know he's going to look at his interests. Fine. The thing is, I think you underestimate how important Iran is in geopolitically. Mm. It is not in America's interest to have another Libya sat in Iran. I think they would have learned more lessons. Iran has, just to give your lessons about the population, Iran, contrary to what they put out, is actually very secular. Only about 10% of the population are actually extremely religious. And they're saying about 10%, 15% are backing this. Some are brainwashed or whatever, and they're fanatical religious, and they think that it's their purpose to go and kill people because they're not following Islam, yeah? But then there's also a mafia, and so it's financial interest.
Of course.
Yeah? But the other 80% are educated young people, and they want to live normal life, and they're very hungry for Western civilization. So it makes it, you can't compare. And the other thing I wanted to say, when you compare with
you're making me very late for the news, but I'm not going to stop you. I'll deal with all the issues.
I want to compare with Libya and stuff. In Libya, people didn't come out in millions. It's disrespectful to people to say, oh, it was Trump that started the rising. It wasn't. It was people started the uprising. Trump motivated them. The other last point I want to make is it is a massive investment opportunity for Donald Trump. Not just the oil, and it's other investments like cars and also other things. And I think, believe it or not, I think he sees it as a good financial interest.
But do you mean believe it or not? If he sees it as anything, that would be top of the list. It would be, number one, distracts attention from the fact that I am rapidly looking like a pound shop Ayatollah at home. And number two, there'd be some money in it for me. And therefore, my initial reaction is to think, don't go near him with a barge pole. But then, as you and Peter, if you didn't understand Sarah's reference to a rapist, it's an analogy under which you're being beaten up and the only person that can rescue you is a rapist. But of course, as an ineluctable logic to taking whatever help you can get. Imagine you've fallen overboard and the only person that's going to pull you out of the water is a cannibal. It's what one of my texters, who's as fond of analogies as I am, is. You take your chances, because otherwise you're definitely going to drown. And I guess you've absolutely got to be invested to have, it's a dreadful phrase, but it really works because it's quite visceral. You have to have skin in the game to feel that desperation, to take any support available, even if it's coming from somebody who is, leading a regime that is supremely comfortable with protesters being murdered on American streets. That point, actually, which a few of you are still making, that comes down to the difference between two protesters being murdered and 30,000 being murdered. And that's not an opinion, that's counting.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, British people will be able to travel to China for 30 days without a visa. A deal's been announced by Downing Street during Keir Starmer's trip to the country. The change brings the UK in line with countries including France, Germany and Italy. The Prime Minister says his talks with the Chinese President Xi Jinping had real concrete outcomes.
I know that whatever's going on in the world, the most important thing to the vast majority of people is the cost of living. So opening up access to business, seizing those opportunities, which then gets reflected in better businesses, in jobs, in price reductions at home, really, really matter.
A man's been arrested as part of an investigation into a series of fires at properties linked to Keir Starmer. A 19-year-old was arrested in Essex on Wednesday on suspicion of conspiracy to commit arson. He's since been released under investigation. Three other men have been charged over the fires in London last May. Another 300 jobs are at risk at Santander, with 44 more branches due to close. The lender says 96% of all transactions are being completed online. A leading backer of the assisted dying bill has warned it may never be enshrined in law if the House of Lords keeps delaying its progress. 1,000 amendments have been put forward, leading to claims some peers are trying to ensure that time runs out. Lord Falconer says it needs to be approved in the current parliamentary session.
The bill passed the Commons with a clear majority of 23. It's come to the Lords. It's been in the Lords since June. It's had 7 days in committee. That's about 35 or 40 hours of committee, which you debate line by line, and the Lords haven't yet finished the study of Clause 1, and there are 60 clauses in the bill.
Opponents insist the bill needs proper scrutiny. Schools will be told to keep more pupils suspended for bad behaviour on site rather than send them home. The Education Secretary says it'll prevent children retreating to social media instead of serving their punishment. And the world number one, Aryna Sabalenka, is into the Australian Open tennis final for a fourth consecutive year. She's beaten Elena Svitolina in straight sets. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 44 at 10,197. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather: lingering fog will clear this afternoon to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the 1st, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 7 minutes after 11. I should have hooked and teased this with that, some of my all-time favourite subjects that are not immediately political or certainly have nothing to do with foreign policy. Class is on the list. What else would you put on the list if you're kind enough to have listened to this programme quite a lot over the years? Pubs yesterday, of course. We haven't done that many phone-ins on pubs, actually, but that's probably more one of my favourite things outside the studio than it is one of my favourite things in the studio. But when we were talking about pubs and the decline thereof, and the difference between the inevitable and the avoidable decline, oh, flipping heck. We did an hour yesterday on that subject, and I've only just now realised what we were trying to do. We were trying to map the difference between inevitable decline and avoidable decline. So wonderful callers from publicans and also members of cooperatives that have bought their local pubs, describing and demonstrating the difference between inevitable and avoidable decline. But I didn't actually pinpoint that that was precise. I didn't pinpoint precisely that that was what we were trying to do. And we're going to do something similar today with something that we alluded to yesterday when we were talking about pubs. Let me read you the opening paragraph of a story in today's Guardian newspaper. Labour will be washed away in a tide of discontent at the next general election unless it tackles the decline of Britain's high streets, a study has warned. And The Guardian has undertaken some very exhaustive research into the changing face of town centres. People feel that high streets have declined more than any other part of their area over the past decade. Chains have collapsed. We know that shoplifting has risen. Some of the signs in shops near me, and, you know, if I get off a couple of stops early because I want to walk home up the river, I'm still getting off the train or the bus in Chiswick, which is the epitome of a leafy suburb. And the some of the signs in the shops talking about shoplifters there are heartbreaking. In fact, one of our local clothes shops, which has closed down recently, actually, I don't know whether there's a relationship between those two things, but appeared on the news. It was in the BBC. I think it was on the BBC News because it was being hit so hard by shoplifters. I saw one coming out of what's the fancy gym kit shop? I can't remember, but just a woman came out, and she just, it might be Sweaty Betty, actually, which always makes me think of Basil Brush. That's Dirty Gertie. Running up, no one would call a swimwear shop Dirty Gertie. That would be entirely inappropriate, but apparently Sweaty Betty is fine. Just literally running up the shop, and I had a chat to a couple of the other shopkeepers. And it was commonplace. They knew the person doing it. It was, anyway, you know about shoplifting. And the idea is that the government can somehow turn this oil tanker around, and that if you have nice local shopping precincts, then you have better healthcare and a reduction in crime. That's what they believe. YouGov have done the polling, and it's politically interesting because, you see, supporters of Reform UK are more likely than anyone else to say that their area had significantly declined. And researchers have described it a deep sense of place-based resentment towards Westminster. Now, that is true, right? The polling is obviously not an exact science, but that is, for the purposes of our conversation, and for what it's worth, in my opinion, that is true. There is a deep sense of place-based resentment towards Westminster, and it is more likely to appear in the minds of Reform UK supporters. But just because that is what they believe doesn't mean it's true. So it's true that they believe it. But what is the difference between inevitable decline and avoidable decline? I'm going to mention my greengrocer friend again, whose shop closed and prompted an outpouring of sympathy and support from potential customers. But had they been actual customers, his shop would not have closed. It's the same with the pubs. If your local pub is closing, it's because not enough people were patronising it. Not enough people were frequenting it. The reason why high streets have declined, and few high streets have declined more than my hometown of Kidderminster, I mean nothing negative by that. I've got some great news about Kidderminster coming up later in the programme. Spoiler alert, it's not the fact that the Harriers are now trying to buy the stadium from the local council after being in situ for over 130 years. Much more exciting, even more exciting than that. But my hometown of Kidderminster is almost the platonic idyll of a declined high street. And part of the reason why the high street has declined, the bits where we went shopping when we were kids, is because the nucleus has moved. The hub has moved. Not far, in some cases. But they built a new shopping centre. They moved Sainsbury's to the other side of the big roundabout so that you have to make a special journey to get to Sainsbury's, where there is also, you know, some massive stalls. It's a big Currys there. They have the big kind of retail estate type stalls. So the smaller shops, the smaller versions of the old shops, closed. Marks and Spencer's moved from the central hill in the middle of Kidderminster to the newly built shopping. It's not a shopping centre because it's outdoors. What would you call that? Development? A shopping, the retail development where you've got the Mackie D's and you've got You had a Debenhams there, but of course that's gone under. It's been replaced by either a Travelodge or a Premier Inn. I can never remember. It's a bit of a retail park, I suppose. But it's within walking distance of the high street that's in decline. But if you go on to Facebook groups, happily not the one I'm a member of, because the magnificent gentleman who runs the one that I'm a member of has no patience at all with the, oh, things were so much better in the old days brigade, because he, like me, hello Gary, if you're listening, he, like me, recognises that's a pointless argument. It's a bit like the posts about how we all used to live on spangles and drink water out of hose pipes, and weren't things better. You might as well get nostalgic about rickets and malnutrition. Seriously. The shops moved. And they left huge spaces. Do you know what they've finally done with Woolworths? When did Woolworths close? Woolworths closed a long time ago. Woolworths, I think, closed before I had this job? Not quite. One of my first ever attempts at political activism involved a boycott of Woolworths on the grounds that the bloke who ran it at the time was also on the board of a railway company at the time when the railway companies were rinsing us all solid. So, no, I was in this job, but it was before that. I got busted. I was working in Norwich at the time. I'd announced on Channel 5, so I didn't think anyone would be watching. I'd announced on Channel 5 that I was going to boycott Woolworths in protest at the constitution of their board. And I got caught by the pick and mix by a lovely old lady who said, I thought you were boycotting Woolworths. She was Welsh. I don't know what she was doing in Norwich. She said, I thought you were boycotting Woolworths, James. And I went, oh, no, you've caught me. Don't tell anyone. There's nowhere else you could get pick and mix. That was the end of my political activism. I was no Karl Marx, I think it's fair to say. Do you know what they've finally done? The Woolworths in Kidderminster, which has been closed since about 2009, they've knocked the whole thing down, turned it into a massive park, which commemorates a memory of a local politician who was known as Mr. Kidderminster. Which is, I like to think, what I'd have been known as if I'd stayed in Worcestershire and gone to work for Beacon Radio. Mr. Kidderminster has a certain ring. But anyway, I digress. I love my hometown, even though it is all of the things that are described in this research. It is all of the things that people are moaning about when they describe a deep sense of place-based resentment. But the shops we used to go to moved. And the shops that haven't moved but have shut because we didn't go to them enough. I don't understand why people are talking about this as if it's an achievable goal. Save high streets or face election wipeout, Labour ministers warned. And this is in The Guardian. It's not in one of the mad newspapers. It's in one of the newspapers that it is still at least partly bound by the parameters of reality. How do you save high streets? If people wanted to go shopping there, they would have done and they wouldn't have shut. There would be no decline if there was sufficient footfall. I sometimes worry Londoners don't get this. And look, the research is done in Southampton. This isn't a Watford Gap problem, but I wonder whether Londoners actually know what it's like to live in Kidderminster or to live in a town where the high street felt thriving in the 1970s and 80s and feels dead today. Boarded up shops, a plethora of tattoo parlours and vape emporia. In fact, I think there's one in Kidderminster that does tattoos and vapes. But that you know, that you can see them open up. It was bookies for a while, but I guess a lot of that has moved online. The premises that stay empty forever. And how do you revive that? I genuinely don't know. And I've read a lot of this. And the first thing I thought of was my greengrocer friend. All right, Andreas, hope you're listening. And the second thing I thought of was my letterbox. And I do almost all of my shopping in person. But I'm really weird. I love shops. You know I do. I love high streets. Long before I became a radio presenter, I worked in retail. I've sold perfume, I've sold clothes, I've worked in hospitality. If I hadn't finally managed to persuade some poor soul to give me a break in journalism, I would almost certainly have stayed in the service sector, in retail or hospitality, because I actually loved it. Between you and me, I think I still am in the hospitality and service sector. I invite you into this studio every morning at 10 o'clock, and I can't make you a cup of tea or give you a biscuit, but I like to think that I metaphorically offer you a warm welcome, and we have quite high standards of customer service. But I don't understand how you deal with people who've got what the experts are calling place-based resentment. People tend to think, according to Professor Will Jennings, who led the research, people tend to think that politicians in Westminster don't care about their region and that not enough is being done to improve the economic situation. So, again, the enemies of free market economics, despite the fact that our public discourse is dominated by profoundly dodgy people and weird lobby groups masquerading as think tanks that are constantly selling us the idea that we have to have free market economics. This is a plea for the government to do what? To spend money? To subsidise shops that can't make a profit? It's kind of what the conversation about pubs did yesterday. They should be giving us money or cutting our taxes because we can't make enough of a profit to stay open. That's about the most left-wing you can do in the context of commerce. And yet here we are, looking today at high streets when yesterday we were looking at pubs. So I loved yesterday's phone-in. And the part of the reason why I loved it is because unintentionally, because I wasn't clever enough to spot what I was actually trying to do, we really mapped the difference between avoidable decline and inevitable decline. So there are pubs that will survive. And partly it will be because they're being brilliantly run and they're making a better offer than all the other pubs. Partly it will be because they're just lucky. They're geographical, they're near a football ground, so every other Saturday they're going to do enough business to keep them open for the rest of the fortnight. You take my point. But we live in a country where the high street has died. How on earth are you supposed to resurrect it? And it strikes me as politically imbecilic. Unless I've misunderstood this research, or unless there are some... I nearly swore then. I never swear. But I get this. I feel this in my bones. Not obviously somebody who has much in common with Reform UK supporters, because they're supremely comfortable with epic racism displayed by so many of their senior members. But I get this, the high street, I get it, it's my earliest memories. First time mum let you go off on your own. The steps in Marks and Spencer's had banisters on them that were, when you were little, as much fun as slides. All the kids would gather by the banisters on the steps in Marks and Spencer's and just slide down them while mums were shopping in the main shop. I loved it. I could name you now. I could probably run up the high street. W.H. Smith's was there. Millett's was there. I could take the banks were there, and you went in and you opened your child account and you got your little money box. It just felt safe in the high street. You felt safe in the high street. And that's what these people miss. They miss that feeling of safety in the high street and familiarity and warmth. Because you know where the Wimbush is, where you can get yourself a bacon sandwich, and you know where Woolies is, where you can lose an hour wandering through the aisles looking at everything from bicycles to food mixers. You felt warm and you felt safe, and do you know what else you felt? You felt at home. I'm not sure you ever feel at home in that way again that you did when you were a child walking through the streets of your childhood, and the streets were busy, and they were safe because they were busy. And now the same streets are shut. The shops are shut, but we still go shopping. Oh, it's terrible what's happened to the high street. Hang on a minute, I've just got to get the door. The Amazon delivery man's just arrived. Oh, it's absolutely terrible what's happened to the high street. Well, I might have a look in the shop if I'm buying a new bed, but I'll order it online. Oh, it's terrible what's happened to the high street. Should we go to Merry Hill? Should we go to the multiplex and do a bit of shopping while we're out at the out-of-town shopping centre? Should we go to Meadowhall? Oh, it's terrible what's happened to Sheffield City Centre. My reference points may be a little bit out of date on the big retail parks, and that's part of the point as well. The brand spanking shiny new shopping centre in 1985 is an apocalyptic wasteland in 2026, because that's what businesses do with the connivance of councils. They make money by moving the hubs, the retail hubs, from that part of town to that part of town to out of town and back to town. This is the inevitable march of economics and profiteering. And for people to end up feeling resentment towards Westminster is simultaneously perfectly rational and utterly stupid. So, that's what people miss. Nigel Farage isn't going to make them feel warm or at home. You could deport every brown-skinned person in the country. They're not going to reopen Woolworths. That's what people miss. And to pretend that you can fix it looks to me like political suicide. You can't believe how passionate I am about this subject, can you? But it's the single most important thing in most people's lives. Their town, their home, their streets. And it's not the fault of the current government that those streets are now deserted or wastelands. And it's perfectly obvious to say, oh, we need to fix it. But I don't think you can. I did this yesterday and I'm doing it again today. Tell me that I'm wrong. 0345 6060973. Save the high streets or face election wipeout. The people making promises they can't keep will defeat the people pretending that they can. What on earth does saving the UK high streets look like? Hit the numbers now, you will get through, all right? 0345 6060973. I don't have the first idea how you save our high streets, because the only way you save our high streets is by bloody shopping on them, and none of us did. 0345 6060973. Why are our high streets dead? And how on earth do we resurrect them? Spoiler alert, I don't think we can, but my God, I really, really, really want to be wrong. Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
With over 50 years' experience, at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked-up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Process check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? Stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job. Done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 26 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I am simultaneously heartbroken and confused by the idea that Labour can win the next election by fixing our high streets, when anybody... Surely everybody recognises that high streets are in decline because we don't shop there. How do you get people to shop somewhere where they don't currently shop? They're shopping somewhere else. If they go and start shopping there, then the places where they're currently shopping shut. And I do think this is an issue of unparalleled importance. Our sense of self, our relationship with home, our sense of place is one of the most human things imaginable. And it gets diluted and it gets... diminished with the passing years. And you're probably going to blame the people in Westminster, but to blame the people who've been in Westminster for a year is obviously stupid. 27 minutes after 11. I'm in one of those curious technological situations. If you're trying to get through to the programme, you can't because the switchboard is completely full, but I don't currently have a caller to talk to, and I've exhausted all of my reservoirs of passion and excitement in setting up the depth and the strength of the feeling that I have on this. Still getting texts, of course, about the situation in Iran, but the idea that our high streets are in any way savable or resurrectable is one that I just can't see it. Conrad is, funnily enough, not far away from Merry Hill, which I referenced a moment ago in Dudley. Conrad, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I think you're right and wrong, to be truthful with you.
Sounds about standard, Conrad. Sounds about standard.
I think the demise of the High Street was due to the out-of-town shopping centre. I started my retail career on the High Street in Currys, in Dudley. So when I worked in Dudley and grew up in Dudley, Dudley was one of the wealthiest towns within the Black Country. I think
per square foot,
it took the highest amount of money per square foot for the area. So it was really well. Then the Merry Hill Centre opened up, which then attracted all the big retailers because they had cheaper business rates and there was more of an incentive for them to go to these out-of-town retail parks. That then closed the centres down, the shopping High Streets down. Now, I think what we should be doing is leave the big retailers alone, let them go to these out-of-town shopping centres because, you know, that's where they belong. But attract the small independents back onto the High Street, incentivise them, give them better business rate, and try and make the place more of a destination place rather than we're just going there for shopping. So more shopping, more independents, restaurants, cafes, that type of thing.
See, but this is the problem with pubs as well, in that I think you're right, but that will save one town centre in 20 or one town centre in 10. So here's the pub doing the quiz nights. Here's the pub with the brilliant landlady. Here's the pub with the guest ales and the passion and the real enthusiasm and the social media presence and doing everything differently and the beautiful pies. If every single pub was like that, the same number of pubs would fail. If every single town centre was like you just described, the same number of town centres would fail. You get one right, and it doesn't save the town centre for the other 19 people who live in town.
Okay, so why do shopping centres like, say, Shrewsbury is still live and kicking, and they've got big out-of-town retail parks.
They've got a big old cathedral, they've got, you know, they're already touristy. They've already got a...
So is Dudley. Dudley's got a castle.
And a zoo.
Black Country Museum.
And a zoo, mate. And a zoo.
So we've got all of that...
Not in the way that Shrewsbury does. Dudley's town centre is not... It's a concrete jungle.
I agree. At the moment it is, but it does need some investment thrown into it.
But all the investment in the world isn't going to turn Dudley into Shrewsbury, Conrad. Or even Worcester. You know, all the investment in the world isn't going to turn Kidderminster into Worcester. Or, I don't know, Hull into Beverley.
Yeah, okay.
You see what I mean? I want... it's happening again. This is exactly the same conversation as pubs. So someone rings me up and says, oh, I've got a brilliant pub. I've got a beautiful pub. I go, I know. But that doesn't halt the decline of pubs, or it doesn't... You're describing the avoidable and ignoring the inevitable.
Okay.
Oh, it breaks my heart. I thought you were going to...
You broke my heart there, because I think there is an opportunity for Dudley. I've got a real passion to try and stand
I feel the same town. About Kidderminster. Hey,
well,
you know...
I worked in Kidderminster.
Which shop?
I was on the Worcester Road, and it was called Powerhouse, by where they did the shipbuilding.
The big yacht outfit.
Yeah.
That was a weird business, wasn't it? Well, I mean, Kidderminster, it's only got half a canal. How did it end up with a massive yacht building business?
Yeah, it's still going there. Somebody brought it out.
I never got to the bottom of that, but I mean, go that. It's a big local, it's a very, you know, successful local business. I know exactly how you feel. And that's what they're describing in this research. They're describing how we feel. And I'm the king of the centrist dads. I'm not going to vote Reform UK. But I feel it. I just know that it's not something that you can blame on Keir Starmer or immigrants, which is, of course, what Nigel Farage will pretend while harvesting the feelings that we both have. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
British people will be able to travel to China for 30 days without a visa. A deal's been announced by Downing Street during Sir Keir Starmer's trip to the country. A fifth man's been arrested in connection with arson attacks on properties linked to Sir Keir Starmer last year. A 19-year-old was held in Essex yesterday and has been released under investigation. The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has hit a new high. Latest NHS figures show they filed an average of 950 hospital beds each day last week. LBC weather, lingering fog will clear this afternoon to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver.
They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling.
Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Psst, hey dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Every day, the noise gets louder. Deadlines tighter, commutes longer, opinions stronger, and social media fakes get harder to spot. You need concise, verified, easy access to the stories that matter. You need the Bulletin app. Trusted news from The Independent in a simple, bite-sized format. Download Bulletin today on iOS or Android. Bulletin. Trusted news for seriously busy people.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:35 is the time. Listen, it's a tiny bit irresponsible, this one, but it just caught my eye. Do you want to should we do a quick missing word round? Do you like this one? Luck runs out for lotto winner who became OAP blank. Luck runs out for lotto winner who became OAP blank. And I'll give you a clue. It's an 80-year-old man who won £2.4 million on the lottery. What on earth would involve his luck running out, do you think? If you don't know the answer to that, it's highly unlikely that you'll guess. Back to the high street. Andy's in Sutton. Andy, the difference between available and inevitable decline... Or, sorry, avoidable and inevitable decline.
Hi, James. Hello. Yeah, long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome.
Love to speak to you.
You're very kind.
I want to tell you a little bit about my local high street in Sutton. And of course, Sutton, South London, you mentioned something about people from London may not get the idea, but if I tell you I'm a Sutton United supporter and I've been to many, many high streets, including Kidderminster.
I was going to say, go on.
And when you get promoted next season, you're very,
don't count my chickens, Andy. Count your own if you want. Go on.
Anyway, so Sutton High Street has gone through really like decades of decline, I would say, like many high streets, not helped by the fact that Kingston and Croydon, both very big high streets, are quite close by, so there's a lot of choice. What the high street has tended to do now at the moment is actually almost change its purpose. They've still got the regular shops, all your local brands are still there, but they've started opening a lot more of these kind of community focused places. So we've got a lovely music venue called the Sound Lounge there, which is community led.
Does that mean it's subsidised by the local council?
The local council are involved, and there is some.
So, see, I've got two thoughts, yeah. and I'll let you crack on in a minute, but I just want to get them out while they're fresh in my mind. The first is, whoever owns a business that's empty is an idiot. Because you might as well just... do you know what I mean? Unless they're waiting for it to be turned into residential property or something like that. But you might as well just have someone in there, even if they're not paying you much rent, because it's... It keeps the place healthy, it keeps it fresh, and it keeps it maintained. And the second bit is councils have to somehow be subsidising venues, whether it's a shop or whether it's an actual venue like the one you described, that may not be washing their face according entirely to and exclusively to market forces.
Yeah. I think that's what Sutton Council have been doing, right? Because you've got the music venue there, which is going great guns, and does, I would say, probably the best vegan roast you'll find in London. If you're into that sort of thing.
Don't lose the room, Andy.
I'll try not to. but we had big old Debenhams in the shopping centre, which was obviously closed down when Debenhams shut, and the council repurposed that as a kind of, it's a two-floor children's activity centre, so yeah. They do table tennis to axe throwing and all sorts of stuff in there. They've obviously done it on the cheap. I mean, it does look a little bit tatty, but the idea is...
And people go there. People go. I mean, that's the point. This is a really welcome call, because you're suggesting that local government, local politicians can actually make a real difference. It's not all about entrepreneurs and customers, which is the obvious road to go down, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, local councils really hold the key rather than central government, for sure. But also, it's kind of offering something which your competitors don't offer, as you mentioned with the pubs.
Yeah.
And using spaces for things that were not the space it was used for. So that the music venue I was telling you about, it was an RBS. It was the Royal Bank of Scotland that obviously went pop in 2009.
Yeah.
We've got another shopping centre that has repurposed an old BHS to become basically a co-working space with a cafe and a restaurant in it.
And is it, I mean, and they're active. They're not going to be shut in 6 months.
Yeah, the only thing that was shut that was opened in that thing, they opened a second cinema, which we've got a 14 screen cinema literally at the back of Sutton High Street, and they were showing the same films. Which kind of like you put in direct competition. It might have worked if they were having a different
offer. A bit art house or something like that, or they made it. Well, this word that they use, and the people shouldn't be sniffy about a word just because they're not very familiar with it. It's the right word to use. It's the offer. The retail offer that you make needs to be different, which is the same conversation we had yesterday about pubs. But I think you're actually, and I wasn't expecting this to happen, you're actually swaying me a bit. No, you really are. I mean, this is what are local councils for, if not to maximise access to and pleasure in your local area, your local town centre. So fair play to Kidderminster. They've turned the old Woolies into a massive... I haven't been there yet. It's a massive park. I just hope when I visit in a month or two, it hasn't been graffitied and it's... I nearly said full of kids on BMXs, but that would be showing my age a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the high street can't compete with a retail park.
No, it can't.
So what you do is you change the high street to be a different sort of destination, and you make it multi-purpose, and then you see people coming. And actually, before Christmas, I did my Christmas shopping in Sutton, nice and easy and convenient. And it was actually the most vibrant I saw it for years. So you can feel there's a really big positive impact happening. So long may it continue.
Long may it continue. And I mean, all of us, every contributor so far, Conrad in Dudley, me in Kidderminster, Andy in Sutton, you can hear our pride in our local area. Albeit that I don't even live there anymore. I'm pretty proud of Brentford as well, but we've got loads of development going on in Brentford at the moment. It's something that just needs to be tapped into. The problem is, of course, with Farage and his mates, that they will be tapping into resentment and seeking to stoke it while promising to fix things that they will never fix. Have a look at Brexit. And the thing that you can't do by resurrecting the high street, no matter how many coffee shops or recording studios or boutiques or bougie little shops that you open, you can't make us young again. You can't make any of us young again. And that's the promise that these charlatans make to people of a certain demographic. Richard's in Dorking. Richard, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, good morning, James. Hello. Yeah, so my wife owns a ladies' clothes shop in Dorking on the high street.
What's it called, Richard?
It's called The Wardrobe. It's in South Street, Dorking. Thank you very much.
What a brilliant name for a shop. Get yourself down the wardrobe to buy yourself a new frock. Love it.
That's it. Well, one of the reasons I look at it, because we know, obviously, you see the high street is struggling, and there's lots of things like barbers, because it's not all about them laundering money. It's because you can't get your hair cut online, can you? Let's be honest.
No, and also, everyone's got a beard these days. That's part of the reason why there are more barbers around, but I'm sure some of them are a bit dodge.
Not 100%, but the one I use, I know, is a really hard-working gentleman guy.
Same.
So one of the real reasons high streets are failing, actually, is because if you look back a few years ago, you'd have one parent working, you'd have one at home, and whether it be mother or father would go down do the shopping in the daytime because they've got the time to go and do that because they've done the working or whatever. Yeah. Now, both parents are working, they're having to. House prices are ridiculous. Renting is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can't afford...
They wouldn't be leaving the kids playing on the steps in Marks and Spencer's while all the mums went shopping because all the mums are at work.
Yeah,
you go to the continent and you know, the shops are open, they shut in the afternoon and then they're open in the evenings. Yeah. Every, you know, the reflection of the retail to the working life is a bit poor, isn't it, often?
Well, I've just come back from France yesterday, actually. I was down there from in the south of France. And in the villages down there, if you go into the bakers, you'll buy a croissant or you'll buy a bread or whatever you want. But you can't buy coffee in there. You have to then go to the coffee shop. So you go to the coffee shop, and there they'll let you eat your croissant that you bought from the bakers outside in the
That's interesting.
In the
That's a little more laissez-faire, isn't it, than our sort of
Anglo-Saxon approach. They spread to keep their villages alive.
What?
They have to keep their villages alive. But the problem is now...
Go on.
Sorry, is... Mum and Dad are all both working, so the only option they've got is actually to shop online, because that's the only time they get.
Because you're right, and you're not indulging it in my day-itis, it is demonstrably and demographically true that you are much less likely to have a family of four, or 2.4 children and two parents, one of whom is working and one of whom is in town with the kids during the school holidays, because they're both going to be working. Does that mean that the high street, in your view, is not rescuable?
Well, hopefully it is.
Well, I hope it is. I'm asking whether you think it is, Richard.
It's just everybody sort of keeps throwing up, oh, it's the rents are too high, it's nothing to it. We've got brilliant landlords, absolutely brilliant
landlords. Well, that's relevant
as
well.
And our rates are free. We don't have business rates because we're under a rateable value. So it's not that the reason. The other thing is, as well, our local councils,
I'm cracking on because I'm late for the break and Henry Riley's got a scoop for us. Not entirely irrelevant to what we're talking about, actually, or at least the political dimension of it. That's the problem, isn't it? Is that you've got to get people into the shops and they're currently going somewhere else. And if they start going to the shops that you want to get them into, what's going to happen to the places that they're currently going to? And yet, somehow, Andy in Sutton touched on the idea that actually, no, you don't resurrect the high street by offering somewhere to go instead of where you're currently going. You resurrect the high street by turning it into a place where you don't currently go. It's offering something you can't currently find. I hope there's something in that, but I could perhaps be clutching at straws.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. Helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
11:48 is the time. I'm told by an actual pal of mine from outside of work that one of the venues referenced by Steve earlier in Sutton got smashed up at night after the owner voiced their opinion about all the tatty flags being hoisted around town on Facebook, but we are delighted to report that they appear to have bounced back. Kidderminster Carpet Museum is reopening for half term, just to push some business towards my old hometown. And I mean, if you do care about your local community and you do, and you are from that neck of the woods, then get yourself down there, take the kids down. So it's shut due to lack of footfall. And, the outcry again from people who weren't going enough to keep it open, but who felt very cross and aggrieved when it shut. And I'm probably guilty of that myself. Has led them to reopen it during half term. So if you're in Worcestershire, if you're in that neck of the woods during half term, get yourself down to the Kidderminster Carpet Museum. And I tell you what, if people in the area had put as much effort into protecting our heritage, because the carpet industry in Kidderminster was absolutely intrinsic to the development of the town, and at one point saw us the envy of the world. We had our carpets on the QE2, we had carpets were the absolute lifeblood of our economy. And if people had put as much effort into protecting our heritage and our history in Kidderminster as they have to erecting tatty flags at local roundabouts, then the museum never would have shut in the first place. It's funny how some people demonstrate their affection for their community compared to how others choose to. Anyway, Henry Riley is here. I'm going to shut up for a while and just let you tell a story.
Well, James, a very good morning to you. We have been looking into some reform candidates, one in particular. This is Mike Manning. Now, he is the candidate in an upcoming by-election, which is scheduled to take place next month on Redcar and Cleveland Borough Council. Now, we have uncovered a series of posts from a now-deleted account on X, of course, formerly Twitter. And as a result of those allegations, we've learned last night that Nigel Farage has launched an investigation into this particular candidate. Now, just to give you the background here, James, Mr. Farage has been asked extensively about the party's vetting procedures and addressed this just 13 days ago.
Yeah, poor. Poor. Sorry it's crude, but it's been poor in the past, and it won't be in the future, and nothing angers me more than all the work that I put in for this 7 days a week, being let down by people who haven't told us the truth, and we frankly haven't put enough effort in or professionalism in to find out the truth about them. So yes, I'm enormously angry that you know, many times over the years I've been thrown into political crises through no fault of my own. If it's my own fault, I can live with it, I can own it, but with things like this, it's not good enough. And I promise you that we are doing everything we can to make sure that these candidates for the Scottish Parliament are vetted and are fit and proper people to put before the electorate, whether you agree with their views or not, it's a separate matter, but they're fit and proper people in every way.
I've often found myself thinking this. If I can't think of anything off the top of my head that flies are attracted to. I don't know. Can you think of anything that flies are attracted to? Maybe that, yeah. If flies were really, really attracted to something, at what point would that something start wondering whether the problem might possibly be them? I don't know. Sorry, I don't know where that came from, Henry. I can't, for the life of me, think that anything that flies are attracted to, or indeed anything that floats in swimming pools. But if flies were really attracted to something, at what point would that something start wondering if the problem was not the flies, but them? Carry on.
My cactus in the bathroom, actually, infested with flies at the moment, I've had to deal with.
There you go. That's now, the kind of colour that people tune in for.
It's a very small one. Mike Manning, according to the Reform UK Facebook page, was previously in the military. He now works in IT. He's quoted in that post saying, "Reform is dedicated to protecting our community, supporting the vulnerable and investing in our youth. They are the only party speaking up for our traditions and values."
Mm.
Now, he's been accused by a senior Liberal Democrat MP of anti-Semitic and xenophobic posts on this account, which has been subsequently deleted. I'm going to read them to you, James. Some people may find some of these posts offensive, but I think it's important to lay out.
Yeah, and this is serious, actually.
Yes.
This isn't Henry and I engaging in our usual banter. This is actually a very serious warning that you may well find some of this stuff profoundly offensive.
So in posts as recently as November, that's November of 2025, so a few months ago, Mr. Manning allegedly posted, "Jews, Muslims, there is something about circumcision that goes to their heads." That same month, the 9th of November 2025, in a reply, Mr. Manning appears and is reported to have said, "We already pay the jizya tax. It's called universal credits. They are all on it." Now, jizya is a historic Islamic tax that was levied on non-Muslims in exchange for sort of allegiance or protection. He's also been criticised after a post from an account which allegedly from that same account where people are being wished happy Kwanzaa, which is a cultural festival in the US. It's celebrated by African Americans from the 26th of December to the January 1st. And the reply reads, "Are you having the traditional stuffed chimpanzee for Kwanzaa dinner?" Now, after sending these posts to Reform UK for a right of reply, they told us last night that they've launched a disciplinary investigation into Mr. Manning after LBC made them aware of this slew of offensive posts. I've been speaking this morning with Daisy Cooper, who's the Liberal Democrat deputy leader, who's told me that Nigel Farage needs to go further.
Nigel Farage must suspend Reform's council candidate for Redcar, Mike Manning. He's just hurled sickening insults at Jewish and Muslim communities. Nigel Farage seems happy for this kind of person to represent him in public office. We think he must kick out his candidate now and make clear that these kind of awful views have absolutely no place in British politics.
We've also been sent a letter by Daisy Cooper, which has been sent to Nigel Farage in the last 10 minutes or so, where she is now calling for this candidate to be removed, has accused him of sickening insults at the Jewish and Muslim communities, saying the posts were abhorrent, utterly out of place in the 21st century, and she has described the posts as racist, anti-Semitic, xenophobic, and questions whether he was vetted, of course, linking back to what Nigel Farage said earlier. Mm. I must tell you, a Reform UK spokesperson has told us, "As soon as we became aware of these posts, we immediately opened a disciplinary investigation."
I know it's not a question any of us can answer, but what attracts these people to Nigel Farage? I mean, what is it about him that makes them feel that he's the man for them, I wonder? It's a funny one, isn't it? And do we know, Henry, what vetting process Nigel Farage underwent to become leader of Reform UK?
Well, I do think with all the defections we see to Reform, that is going to be an issue that I imagine will arise because, of course, he hasn't been elected to that post, and nor is there any sign of any election, and there's some ambitious people in that party now, as we know. People like Robert Jenrick, I would imagine, would fancy a shot at being a leader one day. So I don't sense he's going to subject himself to a leadership election.
But would anyone have gone over his past and his history?
To be a leader, I would suspect not, because the tranche with which he stood on also included James McMurdoch, who was a Reform MP who's now been suspended, and he...
That was because he'd been locked up for beating up an ex-girlfriend.
Nigel Farage said that the vetting procedure with regard to Mr. McMurdoch wasn't suitable, and you would imagine, given they both elected at the same time, he would have...
But he also said that they knew before McMurdoch got into Parliament that he had got this conviction. So, I mean, it's very hard to know which way the wind is blowing, isn't it, with old Nige?
But important to say, Mr. McMurdoch as well was suspended. The reason was because subsequently there was a story about COVID loans regards to his company. So that wasn't the reason he was suspended.
No, you're quite right.
But that was about COVID loans.
It's so hard to keep up, isn't it? Thank you. And still no answers to the question of something that attracts a lot of flies, but I'm sure we'll get there in the end. Henry Reilly, I suspect we'll be talking to you again about racism in the ranks of the Reform UK Army and the mystery of what it is about all these racists that finds Nigel Farage so attractive. Answers on a postcard, please. Which reminds me, Mystery Hour is coming up after 12 today. Before that, back to the high streets. Louise is... Oh, come off it. I'm going to get lynched by the... I don't know, the Port Albert Herald or something. I can't do Welsh names, Louise. I know, I'm going to try. I should be better. Pontarthily. You don't have to...
It's Ponta de
Lice. Well, in some Welsh places, the double D becomes a th sound.
Okay, you could say Ponta de Lice.
Right, okay, well, it's always be Ponta de Lice to me. What would you like to say? What would you like to say, Louise?
I've been running a business for the last 18 years. We make baby carriers and child carriers. When we started, we were still in the European Union. We had fantastic support to start our business. We had grants via the European Union, and we had very good business advisors. So that set us up to continue to run for 18 years. So instead of taking a unit in an industrial park to run our business from and run the manufacturer from, we took on a shop on the high street.
Right.
So we run our manufacturer from part of the shop.
Okay.
And we have the front part of the shop open for people to come in and buy from us. So as much as the business at the front isn't as busy as online business,
of course,
it still takes over, and we are still part of the high street. And people will pop in for chats, and it just makes a nicer high street. There's also other people on our high street doing a similar thing. They're selling online, but they're using the shop as a shop at the front, and they're running their business stuff in the back of it. So I think the way that high streets could possibly come back is just by supporting smaller businesses properly again.
And coming up with ideas like that, about repurposing of premises, and I think this is going to be quite an upbeat conversation this hour, because coming away with the idea that you're not going to be taking business back from where it's moved to, because that would leave the place it's moved to on its uppers. You're going to be finding a new way of doing things and having combined premises with some manufacturing on site and some retail, while recognizing that you're going to do more online than you are in the shop. The shop serves a slightly different purpose from previously.
It contributes to your community. I've had numerous people come in with their sewing machines to ask me how do they thread it.
Really?
Well,
who carries a sewing machine around?
They're carrying a sewing machine to me, yeah.
Fantastic. Just in case, I suppose, in case of an emergency hole or something like that. What is special about your baby carriers, Louise?
Our baby carriers go from 3 months and then up to 9 years. We make the biggest carrier on the market, and it is used for children with special needs and disabilities.
Of course, do you know, I was going through in my head then, why on earth, and then of course I realised it's for children that need to be, although to be honest, in a town where people routinely walk around with sewing machines, it's not impossible that they'll be carrying the odd 9-year-old up and down the high streets as well.
So, yeah, it enables people to get up mountains and onto beaches where their children would usually be in wheelchairs.
Well, I think you need a free advert.
Oh, thank you very much. We're called Rose and Rebellion.
Oh, I like that. Where did the name come from?
My husband. I run it with my husband.
Right.
We've been running 18 years.
And Rose and Rebellion?
Rose and Rebellion, yes.
Is that a name?
Pardon?
Is Rebellion a name, or is it like as in what rebels do?
Yeah, basically we do patent carriers. So some of our patents are pretty, some of them are quite punk.
Oh, I love it.
We have the Rose for the pretty and the Rebellion for the punk.
That's sensational. Well, I hope we sell a few as a consequence of your contribution. I know people will go and have a look. But there it is. Yesterday's conversation about pubs was perhaps a little bit more upbeat than I had feared. But the idea that the high streets can be saved is something I'm pretty close to actually believing now, having embarked upon a surprisingly emotional introduction to this hour, which some of you had the audacity to describe as Alan Partridge-esque. It wasn't, because I'm completely authentic in my love of the high street. Miss Jarrah next, which I've barely mentioned. So if you want to get on the board, then you need to hurry. You know what to do. If you've got a question that needs an answer, a mystery that needs a solution, 0345 6060973 is the number you need.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, some breaking news this hour. The Work and Pension Secretary, Pat McFadden, has told MPs in the Commons that women affected by a change in the state pension age will not receive compensation. The Women Against State Pension Inequality Group say 3.6 million women born in the 1950s were not properly informed of plans to increase the pension age to bring them in line with men. We'll bring you more on this story here on LBC throughout the afternoon. British people will be able to travel to China for 30 days without a visa. A deal's been announced by Downing Street during Sir Keir Starmer's trip to the country. Dr. Doug Gurr is the director of the National History Museum and is in Beijing with a UK delegation. He thinks the trip is going very well.
We know that one of the most important things in driving growth is to encourage investment, and investment comes from trust and confidence, and it was fascinating listening to some of the Chinese leaders saying that just the fact that we're out here in force with the Prime Minister leading us, that builds confidence.
A fifth man's been arrested in connection with arson attacks on properties linked to Sir Keir Starmer. A 19-year-old held in Essex yesterday has been released under investigation. Three other men are due to stand trial over the fires at two homes and a car in North London last May. The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has hit a new high. Latest NHS figures show they filled an average of 950 hospital beds each day last week. Schools in England will be told to keep more suspended pupils on site rather than send them home. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, says that will help to prevent children ending up on social media all day. But the education consultant, Sarah Johnson's told LBC it could become a resourcing issue.
How do we make sure that we're able to staff it and it becomes meaningful rather than dumping children in rooms or corridors without actually working on what the real issues are? If you don't have teaching assistants and teachers really being able to do close work with those children, then really it's just putting them in a place without really considering their needs.
A report says 2025 was the toughest year in a generation for Britain's car manufacturing sector. The number of vehicles built in the UK fell by 15%. Issues included the cyber attack at Jaguar Land Rover and US trade tariffs. And just to recap that breaking news this hour, the Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden has told MPs in the Commons that women affected by a change in the state pension age will not receive compensation. LBC weather. Lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. And in the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 59 at 10,219. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
OK, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
But I can't hear it. So, 6 minutes after 12 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Well, it doesn't continue. It hasn't started yet. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. I'll just finish off the missing word round, shall I, quickly? Luck runs out for Lotto winner who became OAP drug lord. It's an extraordinary story about an 80-year-old man who won £2.4 million on the lottery and used it to start a drug empire in his rural home. It had been done for supply of Class C drugs. I think had it been Class A drugs, I probably wouldn't have used that as a missing word round. But I've got another one for you later this hour, all being well. Before that, of course, I need your questions. I need to know what mysteries you have that need solving. Or what conundrums, or is it conundra, that you have in the back of your mind that need a solution. The way this works, if you're not familiar with it, is pretty straightforward. Someone rings in with a question, and somebody else rings in with an answer. It's as simple as that. The magic takes place somehow in the margins, in the little bit in between. There's no rules. Well, there's one, but I always forget it anyway. Well, there is one, actually. I don't like motoring questions. Albeit that a couple have sneaked through the net in recent weeks that have turned out to be quite engaging, actually. But I generally don't like motoring questions. Partly because when we first started doing Mystery Hour, someone rang in and asked me about a very specific exit on a very specific roundabout. And I just found myself thinking, this is going to be of interest to about 11 people. He named a roundabout and then named an exit on that roundabout that you're not, it wasn't even a famous roundabout. Is there such a thing as the only famous roundabout? It's the magic roundabout. And he found an exit. There was an exit on the roundabout that you weren't allowed to go down. And he rang in to ask where it led. And I was thinking about this the other day, why do I have a lifelong antipathy on Mystery Hour to motoring related questions? I think it might all have been his fault. I think he might have been called Colin. And I shortly after that, I instituted a ban on all callers called Colin, which was pathetic, really, in the circles. This was pre-therapy me, when I banned everyone called Colin from ringing into the programme for about 5 years on the grounds that they were all boring, which was a hideous slur, probably libelous. I'm very glad we've all improved and changed and matured. But if you have a question, if you have a mystery, a conundrum that needs an answer, the chances are somebody else listening will know it. They'll be able to provide it. And if they do provide it, they win a round of applause. If they provide it from a position of almost unbelievably high qualification, if, in other words, they are among the only people on the planet that could have answered that question so well, they will receive a Ray Liotta. We haven't had a Ray Liotta for a while. Do you know what we should have done, Keith? Because, you know, I like visiting lifeboat stations. The honours boards, well, not even honours boards, lifeboat stations have beautiful boards commemorating every outing of the lifeboat. And the last one I went to, I think, was in Cromer, and it hadn't been updated for a while, because I have to wait until there's been enough outings of the lifeboat in order to justify the cost of sending it down to the bloke who'll write all the beautiful gold letters on it. We should have that for Ray Liotta's. We should have an honours board. It's a bit late now, but we should have kept a record of all the Ray Liotta's that we've awarded so we could look back over it with a sort of curious mix of fondness and nostalgia and then remember to ourselves the time when so-and-so rang in and we couldn't... But anyway, as with all my great ideas, it's too late now. Someone will ring in with the answer and they might win a Ray Liotta. However, there is now on Mystery Hour a real prize. Has been for a while. An actual game, a board game, or the travel edition. It's in a tin. Loads of people are getting in touch to tell me how delighted they are with both of those, having received them during the Christmas period. But the one in a tin is the new one. So if you've already got the big one, and you've had hours and hours and hours of family fun with the Mystery Hour board game, the travel edition is completely different. It's not only an entire selection of different questions, and of course answers, but it's also a different gameplay as well, and it's in a tin. It fits in your pocket, so you can't take it through airport security without putting it in your tray. Very important lesson learned. And that, I think, is it. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need to contribute, as always. Terms and conditions, if you want to get your hands on the game, can be found at lbc.co.uk. And if you want to dispense with the necessity, if you'd rather guarantee your game as opposed to just make a contribution to the programme and hope that you win it, then you can buy one by going to mysteryhour.co.uk. I think that pretty much covers it. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. The phone lines are open. The pitch is clear. Dan's in Bristol. Dan, question or answer?
Please, James.
Carry on.
My question relates to a group of people called knocker-uppers,
yes,
which used to work in the during the Industrial Revolution. They used to go round and knock on people's windows to wake them up for work before alarm clocks existed. So my question is, who used to wake up the knocker-uppers?
I quite like this question. It's a genuine question. It's not a sort of, because it's not the genuine mystery. I mean, would they not have had a clock? Because it wasn't that alarm clocks didn't exist. It was that they would be prohibitively expensive for the order, for the average household. Because this would be at an era where you had clocks on town halls and things like that, I think.
I mean, that's why I'm just sort of wondering. I'm assuming they would have done, but I'm assuming they also wouldn't have been particularly high paid.
No, that's true. Or their working day. I don't know. I mean, it may be one of those sort of questions that doesn't actually have an answer. But if it does, then I suspect that we'll find it for you today. I just think it's one of those things that if somebody knows it, they'd love to ring in and share the knowledge. I love the... And they'd actually tap on the upstairs windows, wouldn't they? They had really long sticks.
They had a really long stick, and they used to tap on the windows to wake them up. So, yeah, I'm just wondering who used to wake those guys up.
I'm going to go a bit Partridge now, with your permission, Dan, but have you got any old-fashioned lampposts near you?
In Bristol, certainly in the city we do, yes. And, Not near me as such.
You know there's a sort... On some of them, there's like a crossbar. So you've got the lantern bit, and then you've got a metal horizontal bar just below the lantern bit that serves no obvious purpose. Do you know what I'm describing? Can you picture the lamppost, Dan?
I'm picturing it now on my commute to work, yes.
And do you know what that was for?
No.
The ladder.
Okay.
That was where you'd rest your ladder when you climbed up the lamppost to light it. And, of course, on the old-fashioned lamppost, the crossbar, as I call it, is still there.
I've thought about it.
I find stuff like that fascinating, but I'm fully appreciative of the fact that not everybody does. I sense Dan Wood, though. I think he was a man who'd appreciate an anecdote about crossbars on lampposts. I don't know where I got that impression from, but I think we can all agree I was right. Dan, have a great day. Julian's in Chiswick. Julian, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Julian.
I've noticed something over the years with green parakeets.
Oh, yes.
And yesterday I was sitting on Acton Green, opposite Acton Green Station.
Yes.
And a flock of parakeets come over the railway line.
Nice bit of local knowledge there, Julian, because a lot of people think that the expanse of grass opposite Turnham Green Station must therefore be Turnham Green, but we know that it's not. Turnham Green is the bit by the church up opposite what's it called these days? Not W.H. Smith, T.G. Jones, or something like that. Carry on.
Anyway, so these parakeets come over, swooped about 10 feet off the ground, went in between two trees that are no more than 15 foot high, swooped over to in front of the church.
Have you thought of a career in sports commentary, Julian?
No.
No, carry on.
And flew down Woodstock Road at a very low level. So I thought, right, I'm going to see if this is true. So I timed it. 8 minutes later, the next flock come over, and not only did they swoop down, they went in between the same two trees in front of the church and down Woodstock Road. Now, they don't always take the same route, but my question is, how does the second flock know what route the first flock has taken, even if it's 15 minutes later?
I really like that question. Mm. I mean, they don't know necessarily. It could just be that they're all obeying the same laws of nature.
It could be sound, could be smell. Yeah. I have no idea.
But so you've got two flocks of pattern. We're 100% sure they were different flocks. It wasn't the same flock that had done a whole circuit.
No.
Are you sure? Because it could have gone down the Woodstock Road, swung a right, come back past Rhythm and Brews Coffee Shop, and swung a left. No, that would be at the other. That would be on actual Turnham Green, not Acton Common.
They take a different route every day, but the first flock will take one route and every other flock will take the same route, exactly the same. And it could be 20 minutes later, the second flock.
You're on. I mean, it might be the same flock, but we're working on the... I mean, even then it would be... No? All right, you're on. How quickly, how long have you lived in that part of town?
Oh, 24 years.
How long does it take? Because I've been there for about the same amount of time as well, actually, in that bit part, different two houses, but the same part of West London. Yeah. The parakeets now, they're not quite, I wouldn't say they actually get on my nerves, but the novelty and the exoticism wears off very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, I tell you what, they are a danger to other birds, though. They, especially woodpeckers and that, they literally sit there waiting for the woodpeckers to come out of their holes, and they will force them away.
They terrorise them. They're not great sharers either. They don't scare them. I want goldfinches. I'm not going to lie to you, Julian. I want goldfinches in my garden, and it's full of bloody parakeets. And I've got all the special seeds, the Niger seeds, and hung them up in hedgerows and all of that kind of thing. And Mrs. O'Brien saw one the other day. We got one goldfinch, but she didn't take a picture of it. Any given moment, if you went around mine now, there'd be 30 parakeets in a back garden and not a single goldfinch, but I don't know what to do about it. Thank you, Julian. And also, thank you for listening to me. It's 12:17.
LBC.
It's not easy being a clump, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7. I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 19 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Questions on the board that currently need answers involve parakeets and knocker-uppers. And if you can incorporate both of those into a limerick, then I'll give you the money myself. I've also, just in case things go a little bit south, got a few technical problems in the studio at the moment, but I am going to be a very brave little soldier. I'm going to muddle through. Whew. Sonia is in Bewdley. Sonia, question or answer?
Hi, James.
Hi, Sonia.
I had a very successful knee replacement a few years ago.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
But since then, oh, I've been intrigued, and it's a bit dark, I'm afraid.
Oh.
What happens to the metal after you've no longer got any use for it?
You mean after you've been cremated?
Yeah, because it's not going to fit in the urn, is it?
It's unlikely. This is ringing a vague bell for me. Because it's quite... What's it made of? Do you know? Did they tell you?
Titanium.
Yeah, so it's not cheap, valuable. Is it? Yeah, I think...
I mean, there could be a bit of a dodgy sideline going on. I don't know.
I mean, where would you go to get some knock-off recycled titanium knees from? An undertaker will know the answer to this question, won't they?
Well, you'd hope so.
Otherwise, as you say, there's going to be a sort of glut of redundant titanium knees in the corner of crematoria up and down the country, which seems unlikely.
There's lots of scrap merchants around.
There are, not as many as there used to be. And we've been very West Midlands-tastic on the show today, Sonia, so I hope I can sign you up for a visit to the Kidderminster Carpet Museum when it reopens temporarily during half-term.
I will be there. I've seen it advertised locally, yeah.
Get yourself down there. Where are you having your lunch? Merchant's House, is it?
I'm just having some Bovril, actually.
Are you? You've got to keep the local businesses. Did you not hear the phone in about the high street? Get yourself down Teddy Gray's herbal tablets.
Yeah, no, I'm going to Hodge Hill.
That'll do. Wave at my mum from Hodge Hill, practically. You know, it's very nice. And they do nice food as well, isn't there? The cafeteria there is lovely.
Excellent. And they're going to have an extension built soon as well.
It's all going on, you see. And not necessarily on the high street, but one of those garden centres that manages to multitask. Sonia, a lovely question. What happens to knees? What happens to metal knees after the beneficiary of said knee has shuffled off this mortal coil? And, there's no nice way of saying this, and indeed been cremated. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Georgia is in Brighton. Georgia, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Georgia.
Hi, James.
Hello.
I want to know why it is that we humans all have different enjoyments of taste. And is it, why are our taste buds so different? That we like all, you know, I mean, okay, predominantly children like sweet stuff.
Well, not only, not necessarily, not if you train them differently.
Absolutely. Mm. And, like, so I've got a 3-year-old who absolutely adores olives and an 8-year-old who hates them.
Yes.
And,
I just got deja vu. Have I had this question before, specific to olives?
I don't know.
Well, I know you don't know. I'm sort of thinking out loud. I apologise for that.
But it's all sorts of things. Personally, I can't stand bread and butter pudding. But I like bread. I like butter.
Do you like custard?
I like custard.
Oh, but stick them all in the same bowl and you can't... Well, that must be a childhood memory.
I don't know.
No, you were forced. You were clearly forced to eat a really rancid bread and butter pudding when you were tiny.
Maybe. School.
But it's more about... Yes, exactly. It's going to be more, rather than specific foods, it's like, why don't we all like everything, really?
Yes, yes. Exactly that.
Hot food, spicy food, some foods, textures. Is there an evolutionary explanation for our variation in tastes?
Beautifully put.
Well, that's why they pay me the big bucks, Georgia. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you.
12:23 is the time. Robert is in Oxford. Robert, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Robert.
Following on from... question asked a couple of weeks ago about somebody's grandmother.
Don't say that. Did you ask that question a couple of weeks ago? Or did someone else?
Someone else.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought you said following on from the question I asked a couple. I'd get complaints. So I ring in every week and I can't get on, and Robert's been on twice in a fortnight. But it wasn't. It was somebody else's question. Carry on, Robert.
Yeah. No, with having such a connection with your own self, follows on from that.
Yes.
Do people know... A little bit like the famous elephant's graveyard, that they go off to die. Do people know that they're going to die? I ask this because I've had 3 cases in my life of people who did know.
Well, this has taken an unexpected turn. So people who were very ill and they knew that the end was nigh?
Okay, let's start with the most obvious. My father was 92.
Right.
And it was sort of, I haven't got long, and he died 2 months later.
I mean, that's not... And that's statistically also, you're only going to remember the ones that did die. You're not going to remember all the people who told you that they think they're going to die who didn't.
Well, it doesn't happen that often.
Well, you say that. You're probably right on reflection. But 2 months, I mean, what if it had been a year? Would we still be putting him in this category? God rest his soul, by the way, Robert. God rest his soul.
All right. Thank you. The other one was my grandfather. Now, right. He was 69.
Yeah, okay.
In a small town in Italy. Worked in the fields, so for a week he would go to church, he put on a suit, he folded up all his old clothes, put them in a chest at the bottom in his bedroom, and my auntie asked what he was doing. He said, well, I'm going to be dying. But is there something wrong with you? Have you seen a doctor? And I just know I'm going. He went to church every day for a whole week. The 7th day, he didn't rest. We rested for good. Because he lay down and he said, he asked my auntie not to leave, and he just passed away.
And he didn't, I mean, could he have been to the doctors without telling anyone?
I doubt, no.
Well, we don't know that for sure. I'm being the cynic in this relationship.
Yeah, no, he wasn't that type. He was very, very quiet.
That's extraordinary. It sounds like a Somerset Maugham short story or something like that, doesn't it?
The third one
is crikey.
A little bit. My mother's best friend from the same town, but then she lived in England for a while, then moved back to this was in Rome. She phoned her sister. Her name's Caroline.
Right.
She was in early 80s.
Yeah.
She phoned her sister Lily.
Yeah.
To say I phoned to say goodbye because I'm going to be passing away, and says, "Do you feel bad? Do you want to see a doctor?" Yeah. And she said, no, I just felt I want to say goodbye. And they did say goodbye because that afternoon, Lily died, her sister.
Not Caroline.
But then in the evening, Caroline also died.
Oh, you're spooking me out now, Robert.
I know, I was going to phone you during the Halloween episode, but I heard
I'm glad you didn't. It's too close to real life, this.
I know it's not.
So I mean, so, to be honest,
is it possible
with your dad? God, I felt the two. I'd have opened with Lily and Caroline personally if I was giving you, if I was script advising you, I'd have opened with Lily and Caroline. But so your dad 2 months is probably
it was leading up. It was 3-2-1, wasn't it?
So yes, exactly that. It was Ted Rogers. God rest his soul as well. But the Lily and Caroline one, and the uncle. The uncle is probably the most. Well, no, because they both died. I mean, this is very morbid, but absolutely.
My grandfather.
Sorry, not a grandfather. Was your aunt, his daughter, was present during the process.
So, yeah, exactly.
And he just knew. He just started folding up his clothes and tidying up everything, and then he popped his clogs a week later.
He wasn't a churchgoer.
He went to church.
Yeah.
That's an extraordinary story. Well, we'll find out. I suppose all that we can do, and I don't want my switchboard to be overheated, all we can do is say, has this happened to other people? Or is there any scientific, non-medical explanation?
The Almighty phones in, I don't know, for the answer.
Who?
You get a radio, the Almighty.
Obviously, if God rings in, he'll probably get a radiota, but, you know, I'll be the judge of that. Because it'd be a nice, refreshing change for someone else to do the judging. Robert, you're on the board. Where we go with this question, goodness only knows. It's coming up to 29 minutes after 12. Questions that need answers. Who woke up the knocker-uppers? I think that's quite obvious when you think about it, especially because of what Dan said about the Industrial Revolution and the time that in history when that actually occurred. How does one flock of parakeets know... Why do two flocks of parakeets swooping through the same churchyard or the same parkland follow more or less exactly the same route? Whoa! Thought that was spooky until Robert rang in. What happens to knees after you've been cremated? It's a very morbid mystery hour this way, and we're only halfway through. What is the evolutionary explanation for why we all have different tastes? Why don't we all like the same stuff? Why don't we all like everything? That would make the most evolutionary sense in terms of nutrition, nourishment and food availability. And do we know... Do we know when we're going to die? If someone's just tuned in for that, they're going to need a bit of context. And I'll probably provide it at some point after the very latest headlines with Amelia Cox.
Women affected by the way changes to the state pension age were communicated have been told once again they will not receive compensation. The Work and Pension Secretary says the majority of so-called WASPI women already knew the age was increasing. Downing Street has announced a deal with China that British people will be able to travel there for 30 days without a visa. Sir Keir Starmer is on a 3-day trip to the country. And schools will be told to keep more pupils suspended for bad behaviour on site rather than send them home. The Education Secretary says it will prevent children retreating to social media instead of serving their punishment. LBC weather, lingering fog patches will lift this afternoon, staying mainly cloudy for most, showers for northeast Scotland and some rain in the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum.
again.
May Lorcas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
33 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour well underway. If you want to join in, you know the number, 0345 6060973. A strangely morbid flavour, but somehow not unpleasantly so, if that's a thing. Although it does remind me of another missing word round that we may have time to squeeze in. There are currently three, count them, phone lines into the studio. So if you can answer any of the questions that are already on the board, or indeed if you have a question of your own, then you know what to do. James is in Tunbridge Wells. James, question or answer?
Hi, James. Question, please.
Carry on.
So in the UK, we have a series or a system of judge and jury trials for serious crimes. And the job of the jury is to establish whether a defendant is guilty or innocent. I think the original idea was for the jury to be a representative pool of people drawn from the community. But my question is, why 12? Is there a religious or a political reason that meant we landed on 12? It seems quite an arbitrary number to me.
Why does it seem arbitrary? I mean, there were 12 apostles. I know that sounds like an odd thing to say, but it's not beyond reasonable doubt that it had some sort of biblical precedent. But why arbitrary? Because you couldn't have like 100. That would be ridiculous. And if it was too few, it wouldn't necessarily be representative. You want to have a nice balance of quality and quantity. 12 may be a reasonable number.
Yeah, I just think if you're picking a round number around that number...
What would you pick?
Wouldn't you normally go for 10?
Oh, yeah, I mean, 10 is the obvious... No. That's because we're metric.
Yes,
we're metric,
possibly.
Maybe 12, 12... What would you get? A dozen, yeah. 12 was a unit of measurement, wasn't it, back in the day? More than it is now. So that could be it. I shall put it on the list. Why 12 people on a jury? And that is from James in Tunbridge Wells. Thank you very much indeed. 0345 6060973. If you know the answer to that one, I think Michael's had a go at actually doing a limerick containing both parakeets and knocker-uppers. But I will judge whether it's any good before I decide whether or not to share it with you. David is in Bath. David, question or answer?
Oh, hi, James. I've got, hopefully, a slightly less morbid question for you today.
Wouldn't be hard. It was literally four dead people in one question. Carry on.
I think it's actually the other side. So today's actually my birthday.
Happy birthday, David. You must give Nick Abbott a ring late. Oh, he's not on tonight, because he can play the songs. I'm not allowed to play the songs. Carry on.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. So my question to you was, what's the actual origin of a birthday card?
Prince Albert. Oh, no, that's a Christmas card.
Because that's what I was thinking. I said to your producer that, is it something kind of like Hallmark are pushing to sell more cards when it's not kind of Christmas or other holidays? But I'm not too sure. So that's my question is where do birthday cards come from?
I can't believe we've not had that before. Can you?
Keith,
can you remember that one? Keith can't remember that one. That's extraordinary. To be honest, that's why Mystery Hour hasn't been retired, because there are so many questions that have yet to be asked. But that one just seems like fairly... Because so many people, every day... Do you want to know something amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Every single time I've done Mystery Hour, somebody listening has been celebrating their birthday.
Oh, there we go.
So you'd have thought that somebody would have rang in, being in receipt of a big pile of birthday cards, to ask what had happened to, or at least what the origin of birthday cards was. I like that. It's on the board. Thank you, David. Alan is in Cardiff. Alan, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Alan.
It's about the titanium. Following the cremation, the titanium is recovered from the cremated remains.
Yes.
And all such titanium is gathered together and then sold to a Dutch company who use it for second-grade medical titanium, and the money given to the council is given to charity.
Well, that's fascinating. And is that true everywhere, do you think, or is it going to be council-specific?
I can't speak for every crematorium in the country, but I think that's the general practice.
And I think I probably know the answer to my next question. What are your qualifications?
I'm funeral director.
Yes, I thought you might be. Isn't it my knee?
I'm sorry?
Isn't it my knee? Is there no option to give it back to the family?
I've had a case.
Right, hang on, what happened then? Did ethics kick in and you thought, I better not tell him about this because might be breaching?
As long as I don't mention any names. A lady's mother had a metal plate in her head and she asked for that back and she polished it, put it on the mantelpiece.
Well, I mean, but can you remember what it looked like?
It was about the size of a small saucer, and was shaped like a skull. It retained its shape.
So it was like it was a skull replacement plate, as it were.
Yeah, their mother had an accident as quite young and had a serious operation on her head.
Flipping heck.
And this plate was there, and it was recovered, brought out, and given to her.
And she polished it and put it on the mantelpiece. Did she have any? She could use one of those little plate stands, couldn't you?
Could be a candle holder.
Couldn't use it for anything. That would be disrespect. Well, to be honest, it's quite weird to stick it on the man. Well, that's a beautiful answer. It's got you a round of applause, Alan.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you very much. And I'm sure Sonia will be delighted to learn that. Brian's in Wigan. Brian, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Brian.
It's regarding spectacles.
Carry on.
Having been a lifelong wearer, I was wondering, over the years, why they never blow off in high winds. And everything else seems to be turning upside down, you know, trees blowing down and cars turning over and wagons and everything else. But the good old specs never budge.
Because they're hooked around your ears, Brian.
All they do, they just lodge on the nose and it just round the ears. There's nothing attaching them, you know. It's not like they're bolted to
the ear. They are. They've got hooks on the brand your ears.
Yeah, but why doesn't the wind lift them off? That's why.
Because they're quite heavy. I bet.
Not very heavy.
They're heavier than something that the wind would lift off.
Yeah, but when you look at everything, all the damage that the wind does.
So what you're saying, really, is if it can lift a roof off a house.
If it can lift a roof off or turn a wagon over on the motorway or whatever.
Then how on earth can it not lift? Well, I think.
There's no chance, are there?
Well, I think, A, you've got the hooks around the back of your ears. B, it's kind of wedged in place. And C, maybe it does happen, it just hasn't happened to you or me yet.
Well, I don't know anybody else that this happened to.
How many people have you asked?
Quite a few, and there's quite a few in the country, as you know.
What, spectacle wearers?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is the question here, then?
The question is, why don't they blow off in the wind?
No, yet, it's not.
If you bend down, yeah, pick something up, they might fall off.
I play tennis. Do you know what I've bought, Brian? I bought it this week. I've bought some special rubber bands to wedge my specs on my head.
Yeah.
But I think your question is, actually, has anybody's spectacles ever blown off in the wind?
Blown off, yeah.
That's the question. Because we can't presume that it's never happened, which is the premise of your question. Why don't they blow off? Has anyone's spectacles ever blown off in the wind?
Yeah, well, that's probably a more appropriate question.
But then no one can answer that, except in the affirmative. So we may never get... Oh, well, this is a mystery for the ages. It's a mystery for the ages, this one, Brian. I shall put it on the board immediately.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get an answer by 1 o'clock. So either way, you can have either question. Which one? Do you... can you tell the story of the time your spectacles blew off in the wind, or do you know why they never blow off in the wind? 03456060973. Given that, as Brian said, a wagon can blow over on the motorway and a roof can blow off a house. Jamie's in Watton in Norfolk. Jamie, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question, please. Yeah,
carry on.
It's to do with languages. I remember at school learning French and Spanish to sort of O-level stage. And my question is, why do certain nouns in those languages have a gender attached to them, but in English, as far as I know, that doesn't happen?
Oh, I think I know this.
Do you?
Yeah. Is it Latin? Is it to do with Latin? No, I don't think it is to do with Latin.
But English comes from Latin, doesn't it, as well?
Not really.
Among other languages.
Yeah, nowhere near as much as the Latin... I mean, we call them Latin languages. So French, Italian are Latin languages. No one calls English a Latin language. You've got a lot of German going on, Anglo-Saxon. What was that?
That was a dog barking.
Oh, just checking. I thought it was my breakfast. Why do nouns in other languages have gender and in English they don't, really, is the question.
And I suppose linked to that, if I can ask, when new words are brought into use, who assigns the gender to them?
Yeah, okay. So what's a modern word? In French, is the internet masculine or feminine?
Yeah, or computer or microchip, those sorts of things, which haven't been around for long.
I like that question. I don't know. Yeah, all right. You've gone with... What was that?
The dog barking.
Oh,
he's trying to answer.
That's a clever dog. What's his name? Her name?
Harvey.
So him. Harvey. Yeah. And what breed is he?
He's a golden doodle.
A golden doodle. Lovely stuff. Jamie, thank you. Why do nouns have genders in other languages? And who decides what gender a new word is going to be? For example, in French or Spanish or Italian or any language where nouns have genders. Lovely stuff. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. Should we do Michael's limerick? I mean, I was joking when I said I'll give a special prize to someone who can incorporate both limericks, both parakeets and knocker-uppers, because they were the first two questions into a limerick. But he's had a go, and fair play to him. There once was a bright parakeet who slept far too soundly each week. Said, "Thee knocker-upper, I'll wake you, old mucker." Now they're both up at dawn on the street. What I like about that, and the reason it got read out, is it scans properly. It's like the tumty-tum is perfect, the scansion. So well done, Michael. I was lying about the prizes. James is in Scarborough. James, question or answer?
An answer, James.
Carry on, James.
It's about the do we know we're going to die question. Mm. And the answer is we can never get a true answer, because what happens is that people suggest they're going to die and then they pass away and then we're all shocked and surprised. And then other people suggest they're going to die and nothing happens and we just kind of forget that away. But we do have people that maybe would say board a plane, and 9/11 had lots of these occurrences, and they go, "Do you know what, I just can't do it." And someone like myself would always get on a plane unless I saw a wing hanging off. And for someone, we can actually communicate with them and go, "You know, what's going on?" And they say, "I just have an absolute fear of dread that if I got on that plane, I was going to die." So those cases occur. But for the others, they also might have a subconscious knowledge that there's something wrong with their body, but not consciously acknowledge it, because they might not have pain or anything. So that we can never truly determine it.
So we can't answer the question, because it, for everyone who says it and then it comes true, there will be 100 people who said it and it didn't come true, but that doesn't prove definitively that the people for whom it did come true weren't actually attuned to some higher plane or were aware of some subconscious or non-obvious malady or sense of decline.
Exactly that.
There's a story, I can never remember it correctly, about a Scottish doctor who claimed he could predict what gender a baby would be. Do you know this story?
I don't know that one, no.
And he kept a book, and he always wrote down the wrong answer in the book. So you'd go and see him with your pregnant partner, and you'd say, "Are we going to have a boy or a girl?" And he'd tell you, boy or girl, but he'd write down the opposite in the book. Because the only time people ever complained was when he got it wrong.
Right.
So they'd go back and he'd show them the book and he'd say, "No, look, I wrote down girl. I don't know why you think it was going to be a boy." So it was 50-50, wasn't it, every time?
Yeah.
And it would be wrong 50% of the time, but 100% of the time he was writing down the wrong answer, because people who he got it right for are never going to come back to complain, asking for their money back. So he points at the book. I don't know why I thought of that when you said that, but it's got something to do. There's 100 people who don't get on a plane because they think they've had a premonition, and then 99 of them, the plane was absolutely fine, but the one person whose plane crashed is going to tell that story a million times until everybody's heard it.
Absolutely,
What on earth are your qualifications for this contribution?
I'm a 14 researcher and do podcasting and lecturing and all sorts of things on that as well.
14 as in 14 times?
That's correct, yeah.
Fascinating, yeah. So paranormal and stuff like that.
Yeah, all of the high strangeness in the world, yeah.
Well, give your podcast a plug, if you want. It's all decent and above board and suitable for the whole family, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. No swearing or anything. It's the Fortean News podcast. Just got named number 11 top paranormal podcast in the world by 100 Mag.
So. Oh, I mean, that's brilliant, but also 11. Come on. You know, top 10 is what we...
Independent, though.
Well, yeah, we should go back to Imperial times, and then top 12 would be what mattered, wouldn't it? Not the top 11.
It was the top 30. I got in there. That was
beautiful.
All right.
Well done. I bet you were. Yeah. That's absolutely sensational. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
A round of applause, which is almost as exciting as having the top 11th paranormal podcast in the world.
Thank you.
Lovely
thank
stuff. It is 12:47. I've had a celebrity message come in. I always like to share those with you because we are all interested in celebrities in this day and age. But I may need to get Brian... I'm just going to tell Eleanor. So we may need to get Brian back on, Eleanor. Because it turns out quite a lot of people have had their spectacles blow off in the wind. And I don't know whether or not he's going to take my word for it on air. I may need to read them directly to him. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
If the US attacks Iran, will it worsen the status quo or do the world a favour? Were you safe in hospital? And is sending a child home from school ever the answer to poor behaviour?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
The customer service is really good.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Process check 26th of the 1st 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 10 minutes to 1. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm going to go back to Wigan. Brian, are you there?
I am, James, yes.
You'll never guess what's happened.
Go on.
There's loads of people whose glasses have blown off in the wind.
Well, I'm blown away by that.
You're not the only one who's blown. Shall I read you some of them?
I've spotted hundreds of people up and down the country.
I know, you've been tireless and indefatigable in your research into this, but you've missed Jez, my son's glasses blew off when he was on the big one at Blackpool many years ago.
Yeah.
Jane writes, my dad's glasses blew off when he stuck his head out of a train window.
Glasses, amazing, isn't it?
Hang on, I haven't finished. Glasses can blow off. I'm shouting at the radio. I had lightweight rimless glasses, which blew off my face. I changed them for ones with rims very quickly, says Sue. Jay says, my glasses have blown off in strong wind, but that's more to do with the fact that I've got lots of hair and not the bit that bends around your ears, so you wouldn't have a problem with that. My glasses have blown off my face, writes Adam, many times. That was Jay, the one before. I fly drones regularly. I've often lost specs in unexpected gusts. Carolyn writes, my pal Alison had her glasses blow off this week, Brian, this week, on the Northern Ireland coast. She was most cross because they were expensive varifocals. And Patrick's been in touch to tell us, my glasses blew off once, but I managed to catch them.
Amazing. And I'm nearly 70 now, and I've been out many times dog walking in the winds, you know. They've never budged, never flinched.
Not even a little nudge, not even nothing. A tiny... And we've got a celebrity as well. We've got a celebrity. Do you... I'm trying to think what you might... Do you ever watch World's Strongest Man, Brian?
Yeah, I used to do, regularly.
Well, Danny Wallace has got the plum gig of doing the commentary on World's Strongest Man. He's been in touch. Say, hi, James, it's Danny. Once in an 80-mile-an-hour wind, my greenhouse door flew off, so I ran outside to get it, and before I'd gone 10 feet, my glasses flew off at 82 miles an hour, and when my wife found them and put them back on my face, they no longer worked because the lenses had flown out as well.
Smashing joke.
It's not a joke, it's true, I know the fella. Who gets the round of applause then, you or me?
Well, I think it's a team effort, I think, really.
We'll do it, we'll go for
it.
Well played, Brian. Lovely question and amazing answers.
I'll give you another one next week, I think.
I look forward to it. Although, you must give me a buzz if your glasses ever do blow off your face in the wind.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. It is 12:52. Mark is in Barrow-in-Furness with almost certainly an answer to the linguistics question. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer about grammatical gender, as you might expect.
Carry on.
Well, it's not only the Latin languages, the Romance languages. Indo-European altogether has it, and English used to have it. It had three genders, like German, masculine, feminine, and neuter.
Neuter.
And it gradually lost those in the early Middle Ages, probably because the language got a bit pigeonized together with Norse, which had a similar vocabulary but different grammar. So by the time of Chaucer, the grammatical gender had basically gone in English. And it's also gone in Afrikaans, which had a complicated history of the same kind. It seems to originate, and Dutch has gone to two genders, common and neuter. But it seems to originate from animistic religious beliefs where people thought in the far past that all things had gender or sex.
Oh, okay.
Which include rivers and trees.
Of course.
And in fact, one Greek scholar said, if you put your finger up in the air, you touch a living being.
Blimey.
Who would have gender.
So why don't we have it in it? Why does English not have it then?
Well, we did until the Middle Ages.
But why did it disappear? Do we know?
Because of this pigeonization effect involving Norse. Which, when you get that effect and languages share the vocabulary, but they have different grammars, you get a simplified, compromised grammar. And it never has grammatical gender because that's a complexity that you can do without.
A complexity too far. It's a lovely answer. Do you know, in the event of a new word being coined in countries where gender is still established, who decides what gender a new word is?
Well, in a country like France, which has an academy which controls a bit more than anything does here, they can make some kind of decision, but it will be based on the ending of the noun. If it has a similar ending to most feminine nouns, it might go feminine. If it has a meaning connected with other words with a certain gender, it will maybe take that gender. But there's usually a dominant gender, so new words in languages like French, other things being equal, will become masculine, generally.
Qualifications?
Professional linguist for many years.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause, and yet another round of applause for Mark, who's got almost as many as Professor Howe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Round of applause. 12:55 is the time. Dinesh is in Redbridge. Dinesh, question or answer?
Hi, James, it's an answer.
Carry on.
It's the 1-2 why we have 12 people on the jury.
Oh, yes.
It goes back to the time of King Morgan. He was a Welsh king in the 8th century, and he decided to base it on the 12 disciples of Jesus, and that's why we have 12 members on a jury.
Qualifications?
I am a solicitor advocate, and I'm standing outside Southwark Crown Court. I listen to your show every week, and just as I was coming out of court, I tuned in, and the question happened to come on, and I thought I can answer that.
I said it might be the apostles. I thought must have rung a vague bell with me, or you're sort of looking for reasons why 12 is the figure, and so it would be as almost as if they were sitting in loco in place of God. I mean, it's like it's because the Judeo-Christian jurisprudence underpins so much of our laws, the teachings. I love that a lot. Well, have you got a big case on today?
No comment. I'm not allowed to answer that.
Are you not?
No, I don't talk about. Don't really talk about work. But
okay,
that's no,
a yes.
No, I can't say.
Hang on a minute. Just for everybody listening, that's yes. Huge. It's got a massive case on today. Can't talk about it. Dinesh, have a round of applause.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm a big fan of this show. Well, keep up the good work.
Well, I'm a big fan of lawyers as well, depending on which side of the courtroom I find myself on. So you keep up the good work as well. We haven't done the knocker-uppers, which I will do myself if we don't get an answer. We haven't done the parakeets. We haven't done George's question about why we don't like why don't we all like everything? Why do we have different tastes? Given that evolution would suggest we would all enjoy tucking into anything and everything. I think that's pretty much. Birthday cards. What is the origin of birthday cards? And there's one more question that James asked where I can't read my own writing. Mark is in Badcock. Mark, question or answer?
Hi, is that answer?
Carry on, Mark.
So I think people decide when they're going to die in some circumstances. So I've got a couple of examples. So my dad had terminal cancer, was at home.
I'm sorry.
And the GP, that's okay, thank you. The GP arrived at 7:30 in the morning to check on him, went upstairs to see him, spoke to him, gave him the results of the Tottenham game the night before.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as he heard the results of the Tottenham game, that was it. He died there and then.
Did they lose?
He was there. Most probably, yeah.
So you can't even remember?
No, I can't. It was a couple of years ago.
Oh, fair enough. A couple of years ago.
another example is my aunt, who was a very particular lady, very quite well-spoken, quite posh, if you like.
Oh, yes.
She was in a hospice, and she was dying of a cancer. She had all her family around her. They decided to go out and leave the room for a cup of tea, and she decided to die there and then when they left the room. She was that type of person.
You don't know that. You don't know that she... I mean, she didn't... You're suggesting that she died out of politeness.
Yes, because that would be her. She would not die in front of them.
I'm not going to argue with you about your own dead aunt, but you don't know that that was what she thought to her. Oh, you could die off politeness, but I don't think she died out of politeness. She would have probably died had they stayed in the room.
Most probably, but we'd never prove that.
No, and I like the story. I don't know whether or not it qualifies for a round of applause, but I'm going to give you one anyway.
That's fair. Okay, thank you.
In fact, you know what? Do you fancy a game? Do you want to win the game? Do you want the mystery hour game?
Go on, then.
Yeah, you've got that as well. Stay on the line.
Okay.
Give Eleanor. You can sound a little bit more excited.
Thank you very much.
That is it for another day. If you missed any of it, then you can... And actually, it's worth listening back every day. But when would you listen back? Because everyone on LBC is brilliant. It's almost like you need a few extra hours in the day. All right, I'll tell you when you should... I'm joking. I'd never say that out loud. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now... It's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Coming up today from 3, I'm going to talk about what the best response is, the best answer, really, to a child that's misbehaving in one way or another at school. Is it to send him or her home, or are there better ways to deal with it? The Education Secretary seems to think there are. At 2 today, we have a special report on levels of sexual assault in NHS hospitals. Did you feel safe when you had a hospital stay or when a loved one had a hospital stay? But I'm going to start with the question of Iran and whether the US is about to attack Iran one way or another, whether it's about the nuclear weaponry or whether it's about the protesting and the regime itself. There's all kinds of possible outcomes, so let's discuss what they might be.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, women who claim they were not properly informed about changes to the state pension age have been told they will not get compensation. For a second time, the government has concluded so-called WASPI women were given plenty of warning. The Work and Pension Secretary, Pat McFadden, says it would be hard to identify those who were negatively impacted.
To specifically compensate only those women who suffered injustice would require a scheme that could reliably verify the individual circumstances of millions of women That includes whether someone genuinely didn't know their state pension age was changing and whether they would have read and remembered a letter from many years ago and acted differently.
Labour MP Rebecca Long-Bailey, who sits on the all-party parliamentary group representing Waspy Women, says there was clear injustice. Downing Street has confirmed a deal with China which will allow British people to travel there for 30 days without a visa. Sir Keir Starmer is on the second day of a three-day trip to the country, the first Prime Minister to visit since Theresa May in 2018. Critics are concerned about China's espionage and human rights record, but trade adviser David Hennig says it makes sense to push for a stronger relationship.
China is now one of two superpowers. I think it would be ridiculous for the UK not to engage with China. This is an open economy. The UK is a trading nation. We need to engage with China. It doesn't mean we have to close our eyes to the things where we have concerns, but we must engage.
A fifth man has been arrested in connection with arson attacks on property linked to the Prime Minister. The 19-year-old has been released under investigation. Three men are due to stand trial over the fires at two homes and a car in North London in May last year. The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has hit a new high for this winter. An average of 950 beds were filled each day last week. And education unions say they're not sure whether a new policy on suspensions will work. The government wants fewer pupils in England to be sent home, but union leaders say there mightn't be enough teachers to look after them in school. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 75 points at 10,229. The pound buys $1.38 and €1.15. LBC weather, lingering fog patches will lift this afternoon, staying mainly cloudy for most. Showers for northeast Scotland and some rain in the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Subway knows you love a good deal. So say hello to Sub Yay. Weekly deals that will make you go, yay. That money off your fave subs and spuds, getting bonus points on your order, or free upgrades to a meal deal. That's Sub Yay. Get all the best offers exclusively for Subway Rewards members. See the Subway app for specific offer availability and T's and C's.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I want to spend this hour, most of it anyway, talking with you about Iran and the US and those pretty obvious threats of strikes on Iran by the US. We'll also reflect after 1:30 on the Prime Minister's trip to China, a bit more detail coming out of it after they've been there for 24 hours. So we'll look into that too in about half an hour's time. But I want to speak to you about Iran and the kind of things that the US is indicating, mainly through Donald Trump's posts on Truth Social. There are all kinds of potential outcomes, aren't there, to this? I think it's pretty clear that the US does look poised to hit Iran within days, maybe even today. The targets are perhaps predictable. The outcome of it all, as we've seen with Iraq, as we've seen with Libya, may be less predictable. So what is likely to happen in your view, particularly those of you, and I know many of you listening have strong connections to Iran, and many of you listening are very interested in international affairs as well and keep yourselves informed. What does America want to hear? Should it be just about the nuclear weaponry, which has dominated the most recent posts of Donald Trump, where previously he was talking much more vocally about the protests and the rights of Iranians, because that can't be forgotten in all of this, particularly the scale of killing that's taken place in the last couple of weeks. Faribaz Pouya joins me to talk about this, the founder of the Iranian Secular Society, who came to England over 40 years ago from Iran as a refugee. Faribaz left to enrol in a university in London, was involved in a student group protesting the violence then of the Islamic Republic. The Iranian government learned of this and refused to renew his passport, and then in true totalitarian style proceeded to put pressure on his family in Iran to stop participation in any protests. And as we've seen in very brutal ways in the last couple of weeks and prior to that, they really do come down hard on those who do protest. Faribaz joins me now. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
While the world's attention is on Iran now, I'm sure yours is on it a lot more often over the four decades that you've lived here.
Absolutely. And, you know, the scale of the killing has just left a lot of people in shock. Iranian society at the moment is going through a horrific experience, and it's and it's still dealing with the trauma. I mean, the scale of this is being worked out. We just started to receive details of the brutality as the internet is intermittently opened. I've only managed to say just a few lines with my family to confirm that they're okay, and that was it. But the scale of the brutality is just emerging, and society is in shock. So naturally, everybody is worried about the situation with the Islamic regime and its killing. Mm. At the same time, we see the news of the possible military intervention by United States. That soon adds additional layer to the issues that people are discussing.
Well, let's focus on that last thing you mentioned there. I'll absolutely come back to the protests and the people and what they want and what seems likely and what seems unlikely. But when it comes to these strikes that we are expecting by the United States, I mean, Donald Trump is being pretty explicit about it, isn't he? Does that give you hope or does it make you more nervous?
I think it makes a lot of people more nervous because the outcome is not very clear. It makes people nervous because of the history of United States intervention in Iran and history of United States intervention in Iran and its intervention in the Middle East. So I think that's, you know, I can't see an example of a successful military intervention in the Middle East by the United States and external powers, and also the history of the United States intervening in Iranian politics from the 50s to even 1979, you know, cooperating and co-opting Islamists into power. But we've seen for nearly 50 years of, despotic rule. So I think that makes a lot of people nervous. The outcome is not really clear. Even Donald Trump himself doesn't know what he wants. I'm sure he does, but he's not spitting it out. Is he just going to attack Islamic regime on his nuclear site, which he says is destroyed? So I don't know what intervention, military intervention, would benefit from
I think he said at the time of the 12-day attacks, said it was it had been set back a decade. Yeah. But clearly that's not enough for him based on what he's been saying. Do you think the protests have given him he feels that they've given him, not just the protests, but the response to the protests has given him a kind of legitimacy in coming back for more?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is